Freddy Mysterioso is here. I'm just trying to get in touch with our guest here. And that may come through the speakers.
How hard is it to realize that by remaining indifferent, we simply enable this secrecy, which then breeds corruption and thus contributes to the problem?
Hi, Greg.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you fine. Can you hear me?
Yeah. I forgot my computer. I'm doing this through my phone through Skype. I'm using my phone as a Skype.
Oh, my.
Yeah, I get out of the car and I heft my bag up and I realize... Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Okay, I realize that the computer is not in there, and then I thought, well, I've got Skype on my phone. Let's see if that works.
Is this going to cost you a small fortune?
No, no. I mean, it's just going through the... It's going through the Wi-Fi here at Kill Radio.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. So, here, let me... I'm going to play the intro here and see if it can work at the same time. Can you hear me?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's Radio Mysterioso here for August 3rd. 3rd? Of 2014. Let's see if this works.
Interested in the future, for that is where you and I are going to spend the rest of our lives. And remember, my friend, future events such as these will affect you in the future. You are interested in the unknown, the mysterious, the unexplainable. That is why you are here. And now, for the first time, we are bringing to you the full story of what happened on that fateful day. We are giving you all the evidence based only on the secret testimony of the miserable souls who survived this terrifying ordeal.
The incidents, the places.
My friend, we cannot keep this a secret any longer. Let us punish the guilty. Let us reward the innocent. My friend, can your heart stand the shocking facts about
Radio Mysterioso?
I'm going to set the recorder here just a second. I've got the normal recorder going, but I want to have this backup going just in case something historic happens, like it always does on this show. Hey, Paul, can you still hear me?
I can still hear you.
Oh, wow. The phone runs both at the same time. Well, let me fade down the wonderful opening here. And as long as you can hear me and we're still going, that's great. There we go. How are you, Paul?
Hello?
There we go. Yeah, it's for some reason when I turned down the iTunes music, it actually turned down everything. It just turned down the whole shebang. Now I can hear you and we're doing fine, so that's great. That's what editing is for.
So nobody heard me when I said that. Now I got to say it again. That you have the best opening theme of any paranormal radio show or podcast in the world.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I thought for a long time. I didn't. That was just a natural choice for me because it's Ed Wood, and Ed Wood's one of my heroes. So
I'll let that sink into the audience for a second. But yeah, I've been incompetent.
With Greg
many times.
Huh?
He has a wonderful collection of Angora sweaters. So
who does?
You do.
Those are old. I don't wear them anymore.
I'm not supposed to tell anyone about that. I'm sorry.
He completely did not. Well, I guess he kind of knew what he was doing. He had no idea that nobody thought he knew what he was doing, and he didn't care. And I really respect that, and I love it.
I have a great deal in common with him as a filmmaker.
I don't know if I'd say that. I haven't seen the new one. Looks really good. The little clips and things you've sent me. I haven't seen the whole. It was changed to The Cuckoo in the Clock, I think.
Yeah, actually, I have two.
The title.
Yeah, it used to be Damnation. Now it's The Cuckoo and the Clock. And Roundabout is done too, just tweaking some sound and picture things, but it's they'll both be done for September.
Yeah.
And I actually I'll actually have a I can't tell you what the announcement is yet, but on Wednesday okay. I'll be at a press conference and I will be able to tell folks you know, sort of an exciting little announcement about both films. So
oh cool.
Yeah.
Press
conference. That sounds important.
Paul's going to have a press conference. Is it a normal press conference where a certain amount of people show up, or did you have to, like, really bug people?
Oh, no, it's not me. I'm just one of many filmmakers that will be participating at the press conference. And anybody who's listening here in Halifax, which I don't know, probably like two people, no offense, but it's midnight here, so most of my friends are in bed, would probably know what that announcement's going to be, but I can't say publicly. And then I'm flying to the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. to Stephen Bassett and I are going to be making an exciting announcement as well.
Well, it better not be. I guess it's not. What is it? Next weekend? Because that's the next weekend coming up is that Contact in the Desert thing.
Oh, right. Yes. The big, or as I like to call it, Contact in the Desert. I don't know. I'm here all week, folks, twice on Sunday. Everybody and their dog in the exopolitics, except for the excommunicated exopols, the excom exopols. I like that. Alfred Weber and Michael Sala. But the rest of them will all be there, right? Bassett, Greer, Dolan, the whole crowd. Yes?
Yeah, I'm not sure about Bassett. I suppose he's going to be there. I didn't really I looked at the guest schedule or whatever speaker schedule months ago, and I realized with some chagrin and maybe some nostalgia that I don't really feel like going.
I was going to ask you, are you going? And I gather the answer is no.
No, I'm going to go flying the first day of it, and I'm going to go see my parents the second day of it.
Well, those are two reasonable alternatives, but if I was out there, I'd go. I'm not sure they'd let me in, and I'd hate it if they let me in and then Greer locked the doors or his security henchman locked the doors behind me and I couldn't get out. That would be horrifying.
It's an open plan. I mean, it's at the Institute of Mental Physics, and there's only a couple of, you know, well, I guess they during the day, because it's hot as hell. I don't know who planned a conference in the middle of August in the desert, but the buildings are enclosed and air conditioned and all that. So I guess they could lock you in. I don't know.
Well, didn't he do that, though? Or wasn't there a rumor that at some, I think it was a Contact in the Desert conference, although I'm not sure, when he was giving his lecture, his people, and I put that in quotation marks that people can't see because this is radio, but his people,
air quotes,
locked the doors so that nobody could leave during the lecture. I thought I heard some rumor to that.
Yeah, I heard a rumor about it, but I don't know if it's true. I saw him standing there with like a bunch with an entourage or a bunch of people standing around him, looking tough, I guess.
It was like
two guys, I think.
Yeah, you know, his entourage. I ran afoul of his entourage. I don't know if I ever told this story, so I'll make it quick. If I did on Radio Mysterioso, probably been on enough. But when I was shooting the Stan Friedman documentary in 2001 at the MUFON Symposium out there in Irvine, California, or as we like to call it here in Canada, Irvine, California.
Irvine.
He was speaking, and we had free rein to and permission from the MUFON people to film any part of the proceedings that we wanted to. So we were set up on a podium, blah, blah, blah. I mean, literally, could film anything. So that's important to know.
Yeah.
And I took a small camera, a small handheld mini DV camera, because our beta camera was getting the primary footage of him speaking. And I have to tell you, I had no idea who Stephen Greer was at this time. I wasn't into ufology. This was just me doing a gig. And
yeah, I was at that conference.
Yeah, you might have been, but we didn't meet.
No,
we
hadn't met yet.
Yeah, I didn't actually know you at that
time. Until 4 years later or five.
Yeah, I don't think I knew. I know who Nick was. I had made contact with Mac, but I actually hadn't met you. So I take the handheld camera and I'm filming audience reaction shots. So, you know, I'm filming the audience. Well, I have to admit, a room full of 400 people, all of whom believe, or most of whom believe, that the government's out to get them, perhaps standing there pointing a camera at them wasn't the smartest thing that I could have done.
Yes.
But I had permission. And in a documentary, you always want cutaways.
Yeah.
And then one of his goons, he had goons with him. They were goons, too. They
I remember. I remember he had them.
Yeah. Came over and lit. I was going to say literally grab my arm as opposed to figuratively grab. I hate it when people say literally. But he grabbed my arm, and I still have the footage of this shot because I didn't see him coming. Of the crowd shot, and then suddenly the camera like gets yanked right down, and you've got a shot of the floor.
Yeah.
But I kept filming. And I swear, one of these days, I'm going to dig that tape out and release what they said to me, because it was both frightening and hilarious at the same time, which kind of describes ufology. But the guy looked at me, and Greer, he was still speaking, but kind of looking over at the corner of his eye, and a couple of my crew guys were starting to look as well, and I'm thinking, there's going to be a fight here. And the guy looks at me, one of his goons, and says, "You're making an awful lot of people nervous with that camera of yours. Why are you taking these pictures?" I said, "Dude, if anyone's making anybody nervous right now, it's you. You're the guy who's acting like, you know, Joe's CIA or whatever." Because he had a suit on, too. And I was just dressed in shorts and a polo shirt.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of like, give me my arm back. I have full permission to film whatever I want here. Well, we didn't give you permission. Well, you don't have to. I mean, like, I have permission.
It's not your conference.
And so we finally let go of my arm. And it never really resolved itself, because they were kind of giving me the pose, and I thought I could keep filming, but you know what? I'm going to go get a different angle, far away from these nuts, and I won't film audience shots as obviously. I'll pretend I'm filming Greer from a second angle, which is mostly what I did. And every now and then I'd move the camera and get a quick shot of somebody in the audience. But yeah. That was my first real run-in with the crazy side. I mean, all I knew of ufology or UFOs or whatever was Dan Friedman, because I'd been to some of his lectures where nothing like this ever happened.
Yeah.
And he was a relative. He was an uncle. So, you know, I knew Stan. He was a nice guy. Even if I didn't agree with him, perfectly sensible, normal fellow who would never threaten you with physical violence if you went to take a picture of him. In fact, if you didn't want to take a picture of him, Stan might threaten you with physical violence. So...
Well, this was the audience. It wasn't you weren't pointing it at Greer. Probably some people in the audience complained to the guy.
No, but that's the thing. Nobody in the audience had complained. Nobody had even looked. They hadn't even noticed I was there. And I sort of heard afterwards that nobody would have had a problem with it. You know, Jan Harzen, who was running the thing. I think he's the head of MUFON now. I think he is. He was running that particular event. And he said, "Look, I'm really sorry that happened. You know, it's." Well, we've never seen something like that happen before. And I said, I've never seen something like that happen either.
Yeah.
But I'll put my lawyer hat on for a second. And you know, I kind of felt like saying, "Look, I'd like you to call the local police. I want to charge that guy with assault. You can't just grab somebody's arm, twist it, and yank it down. I mean, it's common assault." I didn't. Wasn't worth the time, effort, trouble, or anything. But I thought, you know, at least the threat of it would be an interesting. And even then I thought, no, that would be bad, too. The next thing I know, this filmmaker threatened to charge Greer people with assault. He must clearly be with the CIA. And it was going to take at least a couple more years before anyone would say that about me. So I didn't want to start right off with the CIA thing. So, yeah, that was my first introduction to the craziness of ufology, was being physically assaulted while trying to, you know, just film a documentary that was giving them not Greer. He wasn't in the film at the end of the day, but giving at least UFOs and Stan Friedman a sympathetic, serious look. And so that's how they reacted, which anybody who wonders why the media doesn't take ufology seriously, there's that story. So there you go.
Yeah, well, I don't think they'll ever take ufology seriously. And it's slit its own throat, so it doesn't really matter. And we had a discussion. I thought this would be something we could talk about on the show. I don't know at length or what is. I did not listen to the interview with Jacques Vallée yet. It was recorded, and I have a recording of it. The one with George Knapp, was it last Sunday?
Right.
And Gorightly listened to it, and he said that it sounds like they're trying to. He's trying to change ufology a little bit, or maybe a lot, but I haven't listened to it yet because I'm afraid to hear what he's going to say. Meaning, he's got the cojones and the whatchamacallit, the resume and everything to say what he needs to say, he wants to say, and I'll probably agree with him. And then but the other thing I'm afraid of is he's going to say something that I've said that I basically probably purloined off his writing without even thinking about it, and I'm going to go, oh, God damn it. But the thing is, and the other thing is that I still want to have him on the show at some point, but he really intimidates me. However, do you know what he said on the show?
I do, roughly. It's nothing that he hasn't said before. Ufology, well, I'll put my views over Valet's views, in a sense. I don't consider ufology to be anything other than a sociological kind of historical thing that historians and sociologists and political scientists can study, because it's a cultural movement.
Yeah.
Or in many cases, you can take Earl away and just call it a cult. It depends on which segment you're talking to. But it's a subculture. And that's, so ufology has nothing to do with the so-called serious study of the UFO or UAP phenomenon. And I think that's one of the things Valet might have been on about, was use UAP over UFO. Because yeah. Billy Cox, who writes a column or a blog, Devoid, whatever it is, for a newspaper somewhere in Florida, Miami, I guess, maybe the Miami Herald. He wrote this column that got some play a week or two ago, I guess, too, which was echoing the same kind of thing, that, you know, hey, maybe UAP is a better way to go than UFO and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So that's all great, but it's also nothing new. I mean, there's even within the so-called research community, which I prefer to call, and within the research community, I will divide it further. So now I've divided the subculture out. So now I'm just looking at the researchers, and I use researchers and investigators in quotation marks.
Yeah.
Within that group, the vast majority of them are not researchers or investigators. They are believers, hobbyists, proponents, partisans, or enthusiasts. So I move them, and then they get moved back to the UFO subculture.
So far, I agree with you.
But there is a smaller group, a very small group, and Valet's one of them, that are bona fide researchers by any measure of the definition. Whether you agree with their conclusions or not is different.
Yeah.
Valet, unless he's completely jumped the shark and lost his mind, is not speaking to ufology as a subculture, and he is not speaking to the hobbyists and all those, the enthusiasts.
Right.
He is speaking to a very small group of fellow researchers, but he's also, I think, speaking to a broader public audience, and he's at least trying to, and I'm just guessing here, but from the tone of what he's saying, every now and then he comes out and he sort of says these things.
Yeah.
He's trying to reclaim the space in a different building, probably in a different city, probably on a different planet, frankly, if they had their way, from ufology, which is to say, look, there's still something here. Peter Sturck did it in the 90s. You know, there are these people who always come forward, Paul Hill. There's a list of scientists who step forward and do this sort of thing. They want nothing to do with ufology, but every now and then they pop their head up and they try and make the case for a serious scientific study of the UFO phenomenon.
Right.
The weird thing is, if I was to make that case, the one place I would not want to make it would be on Coast to Coast. I don't care who the host is. I know everybody likes George Knapp. Not everybody, but a lot of people think George Knapp is more of a serious journalist than George Norrie. Whenever I hear George Knapp, I just think of Robert Lazar, and his serious bona fide credentials go flying out the window for me. But let's just say he asked better questions than Norrie, maybe. But you're still on Coast to Coast. If what you're trying to do is make this case for the serious study of UFOs, you're speaking to the wrong crowd, Dr. Valet, because on Coast to Coast, the crowd that I think you want to speak to is not listening.
Well, that's people okay. You know what?
Ufologists are listening.
Yeah. But I think I agree with what he did, because he is, one, the people that need to hear what he's going to say and can't get to him normally and are interested in the way he's interested, or at least pushing it in a different direction than what he's interested, can hear that and maybe become aware of what he's doing and what he's trying to do. The people that don't get it, don't like what he's saying, don't think that he, you know, they're not going to care anyway. They're just going to get mad or ignore it or whatever. So what? But the point is, I think he's trying to encourage people to do things in the way that he and a few other people think it should be done. And if they can, so that message gets out to those people, whether they contact him or do something important or whatever is might not be the point. The main point is that he plants that seed somewhere before he goes back and doesn't talk to anybody again for a while.
I would just respectfully suggest that there are better places. If that is what your real goal is, there are better places to go than Coast to Coast, because
that's just one place.
Well, that's the biggest place.
Yeah. I mean, it's the biggest place. Go and do your, you know,
it's the biggest place within ufology or within the paranormal subculture. It's, you know, it's not the biggest place, but, you know, the New York Times is not going to interview Jacques Vallée about
UFOs. No, they're not. That's about the only outlet he has to say what he wants to say, saying there's something sane here that can be done in a sane and I don't know about logical, but methodical way. And I'm trying to champion that. And, of course, mainstream media is never going to listen to that because it's just that's the UFOs is the category and that's it.
His effort is inherently doomed then, because that's the equivalent of going into Arkham Asylum and for those that don't know Batman, I won't use it particularly, but going into a mental institution full of crazy people and trying to, you know, convince them that sanity and reality is the way to go and proper methods and everything. It's so, yes, you're going to get a large crowd and they'll pay attention to you.
But there's three people there that aren't insane, probably, and they're there by mistake, and they're going to listen, and maybe something will happen. And besides, he's not on there just like, you know, pumping books and doing what people normally do. He was talking about ideas, and then he disappears in the woodwork again, and most people forget about him, and that's fine.
He is, although, and I said this on the UFO Updates Facebook page a few days ago, and I think I got a little flack. That's all right. I'll say it again. You know, Vallée's overrated. Which, in the grand scheme of human endeavor, within ufology, he is a god amongst mice. But, you know, he's still, yes, he's had some interesting ideas. He seems so impressive and important simply because there's really not very many people that he is being reflected against, if you know what I mean. It would be kind of like if you took Millard Fillmore, James Buchanan, Warren Harding, Calvin Coolidge, and a couple other really bad presidents, stick them in a room and say, all right, you know what? Millard Fillmore looks pretty good compared to, you know, Warren Harding or whomever. Yes. Well, that still doesn't make Millard Fillmore one of the great presidents of all time. It's not that I don't like Vallée. I do. I've enjoyed some of his books. I think he's raised some very interesting ideas. I also think he's raised some sort of cuckoo ideas as well, but, you know, fair enough. Of all of them, he is one of the saner, more reasonable people. And so I don't blame him for what I'm about to say, really. He has a cult of followers.
Yes.
And I don't think he's overrated. Any other figure in ufology, and I include Uncle Stan in here. There's a lot of people that like Uncle Stan and enjoy watching him speak, but I don't think Stan has a cult. Vallée has a cult of people, and they're not all crazy people. I mean, a cult of reasonable people.
Yeah, well, that's not his fault, is it?
It isn't, and yet, part of me thinks, whether knowingly or unknowingly, and he's smart enough so he should know, he's kind of encouraged that over the years. He certainly hasn't done anything to discourage it. So, I like Vallée. If I had a Mount Rushmore of and we had this conversation on the UFO Updates Facebook page.
Yeah.
I said my Mount Rushmore of ufology would all be exopolitics and contactee people.
Yeah.
But if I had a Mount Rushmore of serious UFO researchers who've done good work, Vallée would be on it. Hynek, Jim McDonald, and, it's hard finding a fourth one. But
You said Sturrock earlier, so.
Maybe Peter Sturrock, although, frankly, I'd put Carl Sagan on there. Because he's not a ufologist, but you should have somebody from the other side who at least took a look at it and provided a countervailing view. So if you put those four guys on, you'd have four guys with PhDs, real scientific credentials, you know, significant figures, each in different ways. That would be an interesting room, wouldn't it, if you could bring three of them back to life and then throw Vallée in there. Yeah. Now, that would be a conversation worth having.
I think
would be something I'd like to sit and listen to.
Yeah. I think that your reaction against Vallée is reaction against his followers, not so much him. And also because I think you want to say that he's overrated just to say that he's overrated.
No, neither. Neither of those things is true.
Really? Because a cult of personality is sometimes a thing that slows things down and sometimes becomes annoying or ugly or whatever. I don't think his cult of personality, whatever it is that. I don't, you know, I think people outside of ufology don't really know who he is, really. They don't know who any of these people are, which doesn't make it really doesn't make him that much. He hasn't made much of an impact at all in the greater society. I wish he had because, you know, like you said, he's one of the few people. And I don't know if I'm a cult member of his whatever. I think I probably used to be. But I don't have anything against him. And I don't even think he tries or discourages or anything. If people want to react to him, it's fine. And if it's not, he doesn't care either. He goes on his merry way. At least that's my impression.
That sounds like the description of most gurus I have ever heard of. And a lot of it is calculated. Again, I find it interesting.
Yeah, I don't think it's calculated.
Well, I know, because you're a member of the Cult of Valet. So, you know, the same thing that you could say about me, that, you know, it's cult that I react against as opposed to him. I could flip that around and say, well, in your case, it's because you really, really like the guy, so you're maybe viewing him slightly through rose-colored glasses.
Yes, I know I am.
My point is not to criticize Jacques Vallée, because like I said, I think he's raised far more interesting ideas and occasionally interesting answers than most people have who've looked at that particular subject. I just think he's overrated in the sense that people, I don't know, maybe it is the cult, you know, because he's never said he has the only answer. So that's fair enough. But a lot of the people who do latch on to Vallée seem to say, well, he's the guy. He's it. There is nobody else. And I don't really know of anybody else.
Yeah, I've never felt that way.
Subculture now.
Yeah. Hmm? I personally have never felt that way, and I've never said that. I just always thought he was quite important and people should listen and consider.
I'm not talking about you. I think he's important within
a lot of the people research. I've met that like him, well, they're just friends of mine. I have no idea. They're trying to feel the same way. It's like, Valet's very important, but there's other important people that have said important things that should make you think.
So you think I'm wrong? There's no cult of Vallée?
I think there is. I don't think it's as serious as you think it is, or it really has that much influence. And the other thing is, if there's got to be a cult of something, I guess Vallée is a little bit better than a cult of Greer or something.
Well, no, Greer has a cult.
Yes, so I know. There's no doubting that.
There. No, well, we can move on from Vallée.
We're splitting hairs. I think we basically agree, but it's kind of a hair-splitting thing. The thing I want to move on to is that Go Rightly is messaging me here. He says, ask Kimball who would be on the Mount Rushmore of the most ridiculous ufologists. Well, there's not enough room on that mountain.
Well, I would tell him that it's the same people I had on the Mount Rushmore of ufologists, because by their definition, they're ridiculous. Now, remember, ufologists are different than those few people who seriously research the UFO phenomenon or have. So I don't know. I mean, ridiculous. But let's start afresh. There's four faces on Mount Rushmore. So who are the most ridiculous ones? I'll assume he means today as opposed to throughout all of history. So I'll just.
All right. Well, I would say history, because when Mount Rushmore was commissioned, I don't think any of those people were alive anymore.
All right. Ridiculous throughout history.
Oh, he says today. He just said today.
Okay, fine.
There, easier.
Stephen Bassett, without question, anyone who's ever dealt with him should realize that he's ridiculous. Absolutely, completely, utterly ridiculous. In so many different ways, it's not funny. So Stephen Bassett, his head would probably be twice as large as anyone else. Greer's ridiculous, but at least Greer is entertaining. As long as you know what you're dealing with and his stooges aren't grabbing your arm. I actually have a soft spot for Stephen Greer because I find him entertaining in the same way that I find Operation Repo entertaining occasionally, or any of those crazy American reality shows that you just know are not real. It's all a sham. And yet every now and then you watch them. So I'm not sure to look at a car wreck. I'm not sure he would make my most ridiculous list. Bassett certainly does. I've always thought Linda Moulton Howe is completely and utterly ridiculous and probably bonkers. So she'd be on my list. Gender equity on my Mount Rushmore of ridiculousness. I don't know who the other two are. I mean, it's kind of Alfred Weber is ridiculous, but he's just not significant. You know what? Actually, Alfred Weber would go on the list, too. He started exopolitics.
That dude's batshit, man.
Huh?
That dude's batshit insane.
He is. He is indeed. And if I had to pick a fourth, I'm going to put a fourth person on. I'm not off the board. I'm going back on the board. I'd put Don Schmidt on that list because anybody, although I give Schmidt credit for somehow resurrect, it tells you something about ufology that a guy who even his own research partner, Kevin Randall, once disassociated himself from for lying to Kevin Randall about, has managed to resurrect his career to the point where he is now considered probably, you know, the go-to Roswell guy. and it's certainly on a par with Stan Friedman, and I would suggest even further ahead than Randall, because that's what Schmidt does. That's all he does is Roswell. So, yeah, I'd put Don Schmidt on there, because just about everything about Don Schmidt is ridiculous. So, yeah, there's my Mount Rushmore. And, I mean, there's plenty of other candidates. Nick Redfern, for instance. What was the over-under on a Nick Redfern jab? Sorry, I'm just kidding. 1240. So, yeah.
That's probably 20 minutes now that you got one in.
There you go. Bassett, Moulton Howe, Weber, and Schmidt. That's my Mount Rushmore of ridiculousness or fools or whatever you want to call them. But there's plenty of other candidates.
Yeah. Well,
and there's good people too. You know, within ufology, there's a much smaller group of good people. I would put you on, although I don't really consider you part of ufology, but
I don't either. I never did.
If you were to deign to associate yourself with ufology, I'd say, well, okay. You know.
Well, thank you very much. I mean, go ahead.
No. I don't know. Within the subculture of ufology, not the serious research group, but the subculture.
Yeah.
Nick Redfern's a good guy. I was kidding about him earlier. I mean, yes, Nick writes about a lot of stuff, and yes, a lot of the stuff that he writes about is crazy, but his job is partly an entertainer, partly a purveyor of information. He doesn't have to believe or disbelieve it. He puts it out there for people to make their own decisions. Fine. Yeah. But you can't say that his information isn't meticulously researched. And I would say, and that he's not hardworking. So I would say that's the sign of a true researcher, a guy who goes to archives, who interviews people, who accumulates information, then puts it in a package that a person can digest, whether through reading it or listening to it or whatever. And then in Nick's case, almost always says, well, look, here's what I think, but you know, you can think whatever you want. And then he'll have a discussion or an argument with you about it. And people would probably look at me and say, oh, well, he's a friend of yours. And I'd say, yes, he is. But I've also told him when I think he's flat out wrong, like the invasion of the body snatchers thing, which I gave a terrible review to. And then we had a nice chat about it.
He doesn't care if you don't agree with him. He doesn't care if you don't think that that's what happened, because he's not sure either. He just said, this is interesting. It's an interesting tributary. Could be true, might not. And in any case, it's very interesting. Little subculture that people might not know about may bear fruit if people keep poking at it, because I don't know if he is anymore. But that's the same. Remember when they had the Mac Tony's show on Paracast, and you and I and Nick and Patrick Weege were on?
Yes, I do.
And Patrick, I think during the show, and I've said this before, he said, do you think Mac believed what he put in the book? Do you think he was? And I said, no, I don't think he believed anything. I think he thought it was interesting. That's what I think. That's how I think about Nick, about what he writes about. He's got certain beliefs, but they're none of them are hard and fast about anything. And that's how kind of I feel. I think kind of that's how you feel, too.
Yeah, well,
I've got suspicions, and I've got hypotheses that are always open to amendment, constantly.
Well, I have an open mind, and I have a curious intellect, and I have an awareness that I am. I mean, this is to do a great injustice to the person I'm about to compare myself to. I'm not even in the same galaxy as somebody like Stephen Hawking or Michio Kaku or any of these guys when it comes to science. I mean, and like I said, by the same galaxy, I mean, I'm not even in the same universe. I don't have the science.
There's a couple people with cults around him. Go ahead.
Well, yes. But pick Freeman Dyson, you know, pick any of these guys, any of these significant scientific figures. Pick the guy lecturing about physics at my local university. He's far and away ahead of where I am. So yeah. I don't have the scientific knowledge to really argue intelligently or discuss intelligently beyond a very surface level. None of us do, frankly, but we can still have. So I consider our conversations like I consider this conversation. I don't have the ability to play Major League Baseball either, but like most guys who are fans of Major League Baseball, I do have the ability to comment on people who have the ability to play Major League Baseball. Yes. So even if I can't hit the curveball or the fastball or the changeup or the slider or any, frankly, anything that they would throw. I can at least say that's a lousy curveball, in my opinion, for what it's worth. But like guys who go hang out in bars and talk about soccer or football or any sport or politics, even when you're not in it, you know, I have an opinion like anyone else. The question is it as informed an opinion as it possibly could be for a guy who has an arts degree and a law degree, not a science degree? I'd like to think it is. And I'd also like to think that if there's something I truly have no knowledge of, I've never even heard of it, for instance, I would go, hey, I've never even heard of it. I'm not going to offer an opinion on that.
Right.
And we've had this conversation before about the overuse of the word quantum, for instance.
Right.
Usually, almost always by people who have absolutely no idea about quantum physics. But they have the, not even the Cliff's Notes version, they have the sort of New Age version, and it's been twisted, and they use it to justify a whole bunch of things. There might actually be something to the idea of quantum consciousness, and I have no idea. Talk to somebody, you know, who does. But that's one of the things about ufology in particular, and the New Age movement in general, that they part ways with me, because I'm smart enough to know that I don't know really anything about that. But I'd like to listen to people who do, and I know who those people are, and I know who they aren't. And mostly the people who aren't are the ones who are talking about it. So there's the great irony of my life. It's hard finding somebody who actually knows what they're talking about, but it's easy to find on podcast after podcast after podcast, people who don't know what they're talking about, which is why interviewing someone like Dean Radin, agree with him or disagree with him, is always fun, because he knows what he's talking about. He might not be right, but at least he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, he knows what he's talking about, and if you were to ask him about it, he explains it. I noticed this the first time I interviewed him, which was like 95 or something like that. He sat with me until I understood the concept he was trying to explain to me and explain it in as many ways as possible until I got it, and then would move on. And I don't, like you said, I don't have the wherewithal to argue with him about it, so I can only be sort of kind of amazed that somebody who has thought deeply about this, one, two, done actual experiments to try and test the hypotheses he's presenting, and three, is careful enough to say that I think this shows some sort of effect sometimes, which makes it important because it shouldn't happen. And that those three things about him just make, like you said, it's great to talk to somebody like that, because I learn, you know, a semester's worth of a college level class in a couple hour conversation with them almost. That's how I feel anyway.
Yes. I had a similar chat. I had him on my podcast last year. It was a good chat. I don't agree with everything he puts forward, but I find it interesting, and I think it's worth further study. The interesting thing, though, is while neither you nor I nor Nick or frankly, probably just about anyone we know understands quantum physics at the highest levels of the highest levels and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And maybe science is beyond most of us in terms of we're not actually practicing scientists. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't take an interest in it. And this is a broader thing than ufology or anything else. I mean, the world is changing in such a rapid way. We face so many things every day, but certainly over the next 10, 20, 30, 40 years, we can start projecting forward. Moral, ethical, political decisions that are more and more going to be based in changes in technology and science. As citizens, we have a duty to take an interest in this and not just to ignore it, and not, definitely not to cede it to scientists. Because what scientists should be required to do is say, look, we can't explain quantum physics to you in a way that you're going to understand because you don't have the math, for instance. But
yeah,
Here's what we can do. We can explain it to you, and Sagan was good at that.
By metaphor, yeah.
We can explain it to you in a way that you understand so that you can understand the implications in terms of human development, politics, decisions that you need to take to make. In the same way that I, you know, most of us can't understand monetary policy, but it's up to politicians and up to our leaders to at least explain the basics, and it's up to us as citizens to try and find out as much as we can about it so we can make informed decisions. And I think more and more, it's why I like watching Cosmos, the new version and the old version too, but you know, I think it's a very good show. You don't have to agree with everything that they say in terms of what they're putting forward to go, you know what, these are important things. These are things that we should if you were ever to require citizens to do something, it should be to watch Cosmos, especially in the rural South, the Bible Belt, and say, watch this show and think about it. And, you know, make your decisions, try and make informed decisions, not decisions that are, you know, being handed down through the generations based on a book written 2,000 years ago. So that's where I know I said, hey, we can't understand what these people are talking about. And we can't at the highest level. But what we can do is understand it well enough to make informed decisions. And I think the same thing in a very micro level applies to UFOs and all that other stuff, too. Even though I've derided people for overusing the term quantum, you know, I think we should still try and understand some of those concepts and see how they might apply to what we call the paranormal.
Yeah, it's
rant finished. Sorry, I'm done.
That's okay. I am prepared for a series of rants when I talk to Paul Kimball.
Excellent. We should play ufological death wrestling match again. No, okay, maybe not.
Well, we should, but it'll be when you're here next time, and I'll bring back the record that has the boxing bell on it.
There'd be a new group of people that we could use, and they're sadly Mac and a few others that we couldn't use because they're no longer around. So we'd have to change up.
They'd have to fight on an astral level then.
Well, we in the last one it was the zombie Greer that destroyed.
Oh, sorry, Paul. Somebody tried to call me and cut you off.
Oh, probably best.
You said something about Zombie Greer, and then my phone rang.
That's how I like to end every sentence. Zombie Greer, and then cut off. That's perfect.
And then ding, ding, ding.
Ding, ding, ding.
Whoa, why does my phone keep turning off every time I turn up the volume? Well, at least we can still hear you. Like I said, Paul, did you see what I posted on the Radio Mysterioso? I said, Paul Kimball is on again, returns again tonight. I have no idea what we're going to talk about.
Me neither. I mean,
Go ahead.
Go ahead, sorry.
I do have you pointed me to a lecture, right, an essay that was on Rich Reynolds' site, and I read most of it. And I think I understood what was going on, but there were a lot of grammatical and spelling errors, and it kind of like, I don't know why that does that to me, but it makes me stop listening to somebody. I don't know why, because most of it was quite interesting. What it dealt with actually was, and Paul can continue this, what it dealt with actually is, how do we perceive things? How do we remember things? What is the nature of reality and our remembering and our perception? And how does that apply to the unidentified aerial phenomenon?
Yes. And you know what? It's one of those things, because I have a Facebook page too, my personal one, but I have one called Paul Kimball, The Other Side of Truth. And I just sort of repost or post things that I think are going to be interesting to people. And that was and I think it's been taken down. Oh, well,
what?
Because I've just gone to the UFO Iconoclast page.
I know what what I was taking down was just to do some editing on it.
Maybe.
Because it looked like it's a first gone. Or second draft of something. So maybe they're redrafting it so that it's more streamlined and the spelling and grammatical errors are gone. Because it'd be questions without question marks and sentence fragments and a few misspellings. And I'm like, those jar me. I don't know why. That's just the way I am.
It might be that. It's definitely gone. I just clicked on the specific link and it's
not
there.
Well, that's too bad.
It was called The Reality Stack by a guy named Joel Crook, who has become sort of a regular commenter on Reynolds' blog.
Yeah.
And that might be it. But I think actually the reason why it might have been taken down, Rich puts up stuff up, takes stuff down all the time. I mean, I do that too on Facebook. So, you know, get it while you can, folks, at UFO Iconoclast, because it might not be there tomorrow. But in this case, there were people, in particular one person, who left a couple of really, really harsh, I mean, rude comments. A guy who works by the nom de guerre, if you will, of Zoam Chomsky, which is not terribly original. But his real name is Aaron Sakulich. He used to write a college column called The Iron Skeptic, which people might remember. And his purpose seems to be to go to, in particular, Rich Reynolds' site. I don't know if he goes to other sites.
And he's a troll.
Trolling comments is the only way I can put it. He's not a skeptic. He might be, But they're not meant to be skeptical comments. They're meant to be insulting comments. And in this particular post, and there's nothing I hate more. I mean, they're really, well, okay, dishonesty I hate more, I guess.
Yeah.
But there's very little I hate more than rudeness, even though I've occasionally been accused of it myself. And I try not to do that or accuse myself of it. I try not to do either.
I try not to accuse myself of being rude, but people just keep doing it.
Damn it. But yeah, they, damn it. No, that's a terrible Eric Cartman impression.
Damn it.
But he was just insulting the guy who wrote it, this Joel Crook fellow.
Yeah.
And basically calling him an idiot without, and it's why I've never understood why. Now, if you want to come onto somebody's website and say, look, I read your thing. I think you're completely full of it, but here's why. And boom, 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 boom. But without the rancor, I'd even get rid of the completely full of it thing.
Yeah.
You know, without the personal attacks, and this applies to the other side too, you know, the believer side are constantly attacking or using harsh language towards skeptics or even debunkers, even the term debunker, but, you know, all sorts of stuff. And I mean, just what are you, children? Can't you have a reasoned, this is the ufology subculture again, can't you have a reasoned conversation with these people? And
no, not some of these people.
Here comes my Stan Friedman moment. You'll love this. And anyone who was following Shepard Johnson and I live Facebooking today as we were both listening to Stan's most recent interview on the Paracast will appreciate this. Because Stan is very good at, as am I, plugging his own stuff. He slips references to his own thing in everywhere.
As so, I say in my latest book.
Exactly. My website, I don't even know why he says W. It's charming, the old school.
Yes.
www.stanfriedman.com, which we've now plugged his website for him.
Good, yeah.
Stanfriedman.com. But anyway, so here I am plugging because I'm talking about crazy people and how you can't have a rational conversation with them without them. Their first instinct is to just jump all over you. In the book, The Chaos Conundrum, by our mutual friend, Aaron Gullius, published by my company. So there's the
cheap. There you go. Plug.
Which you can find at my company's website, redstarfilmtv.com. He recounts in one of the chapters how years ago he adopted a pseudonym and he was actually interacting with people, much to his wife's later chagrin.
Yes, he talked about this on the show.
Yeah, and one of them, whose name escapes me, I can't remember the pseudonym, but, you know, Evil Witch Lady from Hell 27 or whatever.
Yeah.
Came after him, tracked him down, and was badgering him and harassing him and stuff. But he said as he went into this subculture, and he was at the real fringes of it.
Yeah.
He said, these people are crazy. Like, he had no idea just how off the rocker they would be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of my favorite chapters in the book, which you can, by the way, purchase at redstarfilmtv.com or on Amazon. Chaos Conundrum, Aaron Gullius. It's a wonderful book. You should pick it up. And you know, I've had my own experiences with people like that too. The Greer thing in the MUFON lecture. But I remember when I was an Aztec at one of the Aztec conferences, this lovely, she was very nice lady came up to me and she had a pamphlet she wanted to hand to me. My brother was there cause we were filming and he was my production supervisor. So she was talking to both of us, more me than him, but he was listening. And, she was trying to explain to me how all of these people in the pamphlet, like this pamphlet, tells you who the evil people are, the disinformers, the government agents.
Oh, I've seen that.
Bunkers,
like, oh. Or something
seems
like it.
Seems like a very big pamphlet to just put Phil Klass's name in. But no, it wasn't just Phil Klass. I start flipping through and it's like, Stan Friedman, what? Lady, are you? Whoa, Nick Redfern. And at that point, I stopped. I looked at her and I said, why is Nick Redfern in your pamphlet of government disinformation agents? And she said, because he always wears black, and black is a sign of evil. And I went, no, he wears black because he's a punk rocker.
Yes.
And at that point, you just kind of go, well, okay, thank you very much. You know, you seem harmless, and I'm sure you're not. Oh, wait, I'm in an open carry state? Yikes, let's go. Let's get out of here before she pulls a gun. But, you know, it's just sometimes you – that was one of those moments where I thought, are these people dangerous? Because anybody who would think Nick Redfern is a disinformation agent because he wears black is sort of, yeah, they're out there. So I wound up on their list because basically, I didn't believe that Nick Redfern was a disinformation agent.
No, so I think I've been on some of those lists, too, which makes me actually kind of proud, I guess.
Well, you should be on one of those. I mean, you are a government disinformation agent, for Pete's sake. So, didn't I hear that?
Yeah.
Someone?
Yeah, I think there's probably plenty, or used to be plenty, of government disinformation agents, which is what people call them, and they're completely way off base at these conferences, or used to be. But no one would ever know who they were. Ever, because otherwise they're doing a crappy job.
Now I know, speaking of government disinformation agents, look at that segue. It's the kind of segue you'll see at the written material on my website, redstarfilmtv.com.
Have you been talking to Stan recently? What's going on here?
What?
Have you been talking to Stan Friedman recently? What's going on here?
No, I was listening to him on the Paracast.
Oh, that's right.
Earlier today. So, and whenever you say the Paracast, you have to speak in the Cookie Monster voice.
Yes.
But I know you are, I think you subscribe or you're a member or whatever, the Facebook group for UFO updates, right?
Yes. I only ever comment on it extremely rarely. I think the last one is somebody said something about Bill Moore. It's like, I started to type something and it's like, it's useless for me to even discuss this and I don't care.
You see where I'm heading, though, because government disinformation agents, which I don't think Moore was, but moving on.
Yes.
Not in the way that people mean it anyway. What would you have typed? I want to ask you this question. What would you have typed if you had typed something other than, and I think you type more or less, I don't care, period, or something like that. It was a very short, pithy kind of thing.
I can't remember. What was the original post? What was it about?
Well, I can find out if you can amuse the audience for about 30 seconds.
Okay. I think it was a post by Norio?
We should be singing There Is a Place, which would be even less amusing for the audience.
Yes. In bad harmony. More. You know, I got tickets to Paul McCartney at Dodger Stadium on August 10th.
You know, it's one of the great regrets in my life. 2009, he was playing here in Halifax.
You told me you could hear it. You could hear
it. The concert site was on the Halifax Commons, which is 3 blocks from my house. I could hear their sound check from where I'm sitting right now. They, you know, it's like, and I didn't go because I was going to a party with Holly Stevens. So,
what the hell's wrong with you?
I know. You might remember when I was in Los Angeles with Chris McBride. Morrissey, I know you don't care about Morrissey, but
At the Palladium, yeah.
Right. And I didn't go because Chris didn't want to go. So I have this long tradition of, you know, Morrissey and McCartney are my two founding, they're on my Mount Rushmore, people in music that I worship. And I had a chance to see them both and nope, skipped them for young actresses. Wait, well, maybe that's not so bad in hindsight. I can't find it.
Well,
it depends
what happened with the young actresses, you see.
Well, nothing. So.
Well, then it wasn't worth it.
Yeah, good point. Oh, here we are. Norio Hayakawa posted.
Yeah.
William L. Moore, UFO opportunist or agent of disinformation. And it's an Open Minds piece that I guess Alejandro Rojas wrote, although I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think he did. I read the whole thing and I was going to react to it and I thought, nope, it's just I don't even want to get involved.
But if you were to get involved, you know, because it's just you and me now. Amigo.
Yeah, Paul wants to have a fight with me about it, and that's fine by me.
I'm not going to fight with you about it. I think you and I probably agree 90% of the time.
Yeah, probably 90% of it, yeah. What I would have said, what did he say in it? I mean, is there a basic gist there, like in the promo, in the little piece at the top, the summation, the abstract, as it were?
Yes, Moore was evil. No, that would be Don Ecker.
Yes.
Basically, he was a government disinformation agent, I guess. I guess that was the point of, it's a very long article after, you know, it's talking about Majestic 12 and UFO cover-up live and all this stuff that most people, the Aquarius documents and everything like that. And then is, I think, associating it with Doty and Collins and there's a picture of Bill Moore speaking at MUFON at that legendary 1989 Las Vegas symposium where he quote came out
is that the picture of him speaking, or is that, because the only picture I saw is the one with him with Jamie Chandray and Stan in the background.
No, there's a picture of him speaking.
Oh okay
yeah, which was maybe added after you had read it, but you know, he goes on and on about how basically Moore was a disinformation agent. Oh, and this up your alley, that Falcon was the CIA official, Henry Rosicky. Is that how you say it, Rosicky?
Harry, yeah.
He has Henry, so. Anyway, what would your take be if somebody came up to you and said William Moore was a disinformation agent? What would your take on that be?
He was an inadvertent, not inadvertent, but he was a disinformation, yes, inadvertent, because what he did was pass along information that he thought was real that turned out that wasn't, for the most part. And then in a couple of cases, specifically when he was told to give Paul Benowitz a copy of that Aquarius that Aquarius document, and told him, please take this with a grain of salt. As far as I know, Moore told me, yeah, he did. He locked it in a safe and never said anything about it afterwards. But it did affect his thinking. So
by the
in
way,
that case...
I should say that the article on Open Minds I just scrolled all the way through was not written by Alejandro Rojas.
Oh.
It was actually written, and here's the irony, given it says UFO opportunist, by Don Schmidt. So, yes. Yeah, I see you appreciate the irony as much as I do. So, yeah. There you go. So what do you think Moore was?
Stick up for Moore saying he was a saint or he was a wonderful person or anything like that. Knowing him and talking to him over many years and many hours, I think he was pretty mercenary and thinking that he could get to something that other people didn't. And then he got taken in and it took it further than he thought it would go. And he probably wanted to stop it, but didn't, and probably made no effort to stop it until it run its course, and they didn't, and whoever it was that were passing information through him didn't need him anymore. And the overarching thing on this, above and beyond all of this, is the idea of the UFO community that the government is sending out people to make them think that there aren't UFOs and there's no aliens here and all that. I don't know if that's ever happened. And if they have encouraged it, it's not in furtherance of breaking up the UFO community, because if anything's threatening the U.S. government, it is the UFO community is not even on the list.
Well, if anything is threatening the UFO community, it would be the UFO community.
So yes, that's exactly. You're talking about disinformation, it's disinformation in furtherance of covering up projects and people and sources and methods and all that. Yes. I think they have engaged in that in the past and probably still do it now with regards to the UFO subject, not nearly as much as before, because people can communicate a lot better and screw each other over a lot easier, and the government doesn't have to do it. But in the past, yes. And like I said, and it's a cover-up of what they use the information for, not the information.
Well, let's separate two things with Bill Moore here. Let's separate the Majestic 12 documents, because that is one of the areas where you and I probably disagree about Moore. Although I'm not exactly sure.
Is that because you think he knew it was fake when it was released?
I think he was involved in it. I think there's a reasonably good chance that he was involved in it and that he was largely responsible either for commercial gain, which I certainly... gets back to your mercenary thing, but perhaps also as part of trying to get the secret. And to me, the motive wouldn't matter. It would just be like, okay, well, who was responsible? It doesn't even matter really anymore who was responsible for faking them, I guess. It's kind of an academic exercise. But let's leave aside MJ-12. Let's hone just in on the idea that Moore was approached by people within the U.S. government, Doty, whomever, at a relatively low level, but still approached.
Yeah.
And made this bargain with the devil, if you will. And I remember you and I were on Radio Mysterioso a couple of years ago, I think it was the last time I was in L.A., with Don Ecker.
Yeah.
I think, was Walter there too? I think Walter. Yeah, Walter was there too, Walter Bosley.
Yeah.
And Ecker, and I think it's safe to say that if you were to find somebody politically more polar opposite than me, it would be Don Ecker. Ecker went off the rails. You can listen to the show, folks, on Moore. I won't say he was frothing at the mouth, but I mean, he was really... he was not happy with you either, because you were just trying to do your thing with Moore and say, well, look, you know, I here's what I think. And Eck was going, he's an evil man. He's a liar. He destroyed Paul Benowitz, blah, 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 all that sort of stuff. But let me ask you a question. If that's true, if Moore was really, if that's really what happened, he was approached and he sold his soul, if you will. Do you think that at that same time period, or even today, if somebody from the U.S. government approached most ufologists and said, hey, here's the deal. You can have access to insider, super secret information. We will give you the Fox Mulder keys to the universe. Well, it's kind of a Fox Mulder deal, isn't it?
Yeah.
But you got to do some things for us first. How many ufologists do you think really, truly, honestly, and this includes the vast majority of them that criticized Moore for doing exactly this, would turn down that offer? I don't think any of them would. I think they
I would agree with you 100%. I think close to 100% would do the same thing.
Including Ecker at that time. I don't know
at the time. I don't know now because benefit of hindsight's a little bit different.
Exactly.
If they didn't know about this, yes. And I think some were approached, and when Moore came out and said what he said, they said, okay, I'm never going to say a word about it.
Right. And so in that sense, the one thing, even if you hate Bill Moore and everything that he did, you could at least say, look, the guy didn't have to admit it. He came out, he did the UFO, quote, community a service by assuming this all happened now. I'm going with that assumption by saying this happened. Here's what happened to me. I don't know if he ever said he was wrong, but let's just say he sort of said, maybe I shouldn't have done it. I had the right motives. It didn't work out the way I wanted it to.
He didn't say that at the time. He was kind of arrogant about it at the time. And he has said that. I actually think he said it on my show.
I know his presentation. You showed me the video. I didn't see it obviously live when at the time I was only 17, but I've seen the video. You have a copy, and yeah, he came across as incredibly arrogant about it. But
I think he came across as arrogant because he had a lot of people who he considered idiots who didn't know what he was going through, didn't want to bother to ask, and had a pretty much preconception of what was going on and not listening to him, which is why he got pissed off and arrogant, which is, I don't know if it's forgivable, but it's understandable. Like I said, he said, I think I was kind of arrogant about it, and I certainly would have done it that way now with the hindsight.
Yeah, it's interesting. At the end of the day, you never really know what anybody's personal motivations are. So.
Oh, he was pissed off at people at the time. I was talking to him at the time. I went to the conference sort of at his invitation.
Yeah, you were there on the ground level. I mean, the truth is
I was out at his table selling copies of the speech for him after the talk.
There's a gig that in hindsight you probably...
I had a lot of people yelling at me. I couldn't believe it. It's like, I'm just selling the things, man. I don't even know what you're talking about. Here, you want it? Pay. If not, leave me alone. Next.
Well, look, what people today don't realize is, I mean, ufology is a laughing stock.
And no, Bill wasn't paying me. I was just helping him out.
But in the 80s, there was a brief, not so shining, but still, a brief moment when the UFO thing was huge, relatively speaking. I mean, Roswell had broken. People were in the mainstream were actually paying attention. People were making feature films and starting to make television shows about it. All of that funneling out really of Roswell. So as opposed to today, where ufology and even the UFO subject has kind of been reduced to Hangar 18 or whatever that terrible show is.
Yeah.
And the occasional James Fox film or whatever. This was, newspapers and stuff, the mainstream media, Larry King, all that kind of stuff was going
on. Yeah.
So the people who were ufologists, like Moore, like Friedman, I won't include Jamie Chandray because he's, to me, a tangential player. But, some of these other guys, too, were relatively significant figures, certainly compared to today. I'm not going to say they were as big as, Bruce Springsteen or something, but they were known within the American culture much more than they are today.
Mm,
kind of at a Kehoean level.
Maybe.
Because Donald Keough used to get on all sorts of TV shows, too. So there had been this resurrection of the UFO subject. And, yeah, I can see how a lot of them would have it. That kind of thing attracts people with egos and people who can. I mean, Stan has one.
We all have arrogant. One. I have one. You have one. It just depends on how you deal with it and how it presents itself to yourself and others.
But a lot of it was very competitive and very much in a commercial aspect, too. So you would have the Friedman-Moore research team, especially around Roswell. You had Freeman and Moore on one hand, and you had Randall and Schmidt on the other hand.
Yeah.
And they were the two big teams competing with each other for witnesses and whatever, all sorts of stuff. And it's like two bards trying to win the king's favor in, the Middle Ages. The story keeps getting more and more. You have to keep lathering stuff on. It's, what have you done for me lately? Well, I need a new witness. I need this. And so at some point, it all spins out of control. Randall disassociates himself from Schmidt. largely because Schmidt was proven to be lying about his own personal history, which calls into question any of his other work, which Randall has now conveniently forgotten and or forgiven, but whatever. And Friedman splits with Moore, largely for the same reasons, at least as Stan would tell it. But it was, to look back on it now, I don't think people who weren't there, like you were there, or people who haven't studied it, and I've studied it, I don't think a lot of people really understand just how kind of not only big this was, but how, from a competitive commercial sort of standpoint, the mechanisms that were going on to try and get movie deals and book deals and money here and money there and make a big splash and be the guy. And so I could certainly understand if somebody had come to Moore and said, look, we're going to give you information. Maybe he didn't do it for the best motives. Don't care. But he could have clicked. Whatever his reason, in the back of his mind, he could have said, hey, this will help make me the guy. This is my ticket. And yeah, you know, this will do good work too. But yeah, this is my ticket. Because Kevin Randall doesn't have this. Stan doesn't have it. Schmidt doesn't have it. I've got it. And I think if they had approached Schmidt, Randall, or Stan, all three of them would have said the same thing Bill Moore said. Sure, sign me up.
Yeah.
So there you
go. No, I think they would have. And the way it played out with them certainly would have been different, because I think a lot of these things are tailored to the person that is being used, or is being, you know, whatever you want to call it, being used to do what needs to be done.
Yes.
If somebody starts getting bothered by something, either you threaten them and say, look, you signed up for it and you're going to do this, or you say, well, then we'll shut off the information spigot and you get nothing anymore. Or both.
So
I don't know.
I agree. And so that, you know, even if you delve into the Majestic 12 stuff, I would say, look, even if Moore created the documents, most people know the story of how, I think it's Brad Sparks, but maybe one or two others, I think Randall too, have said that Stan was amenable to the idea of creating documents, and Moore certainly was, in theory at least, that could shake the tree. So let's just assume that they're not doing it for crass commercial purposes, which people would find abhorrent. Let's assume they were doing it for a good reason. And as Brad once told me, he said he repeatedly told Stan, no, you can't do this. Even for the right, you're doing it for the right, or you're thinking about doing it
the wrong
right
thing
reason.
For what you think is the right reasons.
Right, but it's the wrong way. You, like, this will ruin your credibility, blah, blah, blah. This will ruin it all. But, you know, again, it comes back to that competitive thing, and even if it's not competing for money, maybe it's competing for information. So maybe you do say, hey, maybe if we just do fake something, throw something out there, and then see if that gets some real information in. And I think Moore faked the documents, but I'm willing to think that maybe that was his motivation for doing it, that it was honestly held, if mistakenly, you know, taken. But at least there's a possibility that if I'm right and he did fake the documents, that he was doing it for the right reason, if using the wrong tactic, which is to try and sit what he really believed you could shake real information out. If that's why he did it, if indeed he did do it, he wouldn't be the first person in the history of human endeavor to use that tactic to try and get, you know, some real information out there. Politicians do it all the time. So, but whatever else you can say, and I'm sorry, this is one of my rants, he's a fascinating character, isn't he?
Yeah, well, like I said, he's been a friend of mine for quite a long time, and I have never caught him lying to me about anything. At once, not once. Which is, for all the people say that he's a big liar, and it's a lot of things that I've never talked about publicly and probably won't, and have probably forgotten a lot of it. But as far as I could tell, from all the stuff he told me, from all third parties that I checked it out with, and you know, subsequent people that he didn't know, and people that had no reason to lie to me and didn't really know him real well, and you know, information that came to me from other people, all this, it all checked out. So I don't really know what to make of it. Not to say he's a completely 100% honest person with everybody. I know he isn't, and I know he wasn't, but he has been with me. So that's the basis I go upon.
So, Ancient Aliens.
I was. You know what? When I said I don't know what we're going to talk about, I was going to say when we got on the show, hey Paul, you ask the questions this time. You can even answer them if you want.
I was just thinking, it's starting to sound a lot like one of my podcasts instead of your radio show. It's like, but I would rather you talk now than I would. Although we could always play some music, which means I could go get a drink.
Yeah, I'd have to find it on my phone. Like I said, my computer is at home.
Yes, we're doing this all via Skype through a, I assume you have an iPhone or something. What were we talking about? Oh, Ancient Aliens, right?
Yeah.
Ancient Aliens. Actually, if you want to, whenever you're ready to play some music, I can, and then we can, you know, barrel right through to the end of the show. I don't know.
Okay, I'll play music. Just a sec.
All right. While he's doing that, folks, I will regale you with the names of 20th century dictators. Benito Mussolini, Ronald Reagan, Fulgencio Batista, Vladimir Lenin, Admiral Miklos Horthy. Although, he was a dictator. Fair enough.
Idi Amin, Pol Pot.
You're going third world. Fair enough. Idi Amin, Pol Pot.
You said 20th century dictators. You didn't say 20th century first world dictators.
I know. I was just focused. Juan Perón. I was just focused on the first world. But you've broadened it out, so that's awesome. Stephen Greer. he wishes. Oh, my God. Can you imagine a world with him as dictator? Oh, that would be both awesome and frightening at the same time.
There was a guy running for mayor of L.A. one time, and he was rude and insane and this horrible person, and I voted for him because I wanted to see him in there for one day and watch him be impeached.
Wouldn't it be cool? I mean, if you elected a really, really insane... I mean, I know everybody says Obama and Bush and all these guys are insane, but a really, truly...
No, somebody that's really bad at covering it up.
As president.
Yeah.
And for one day, gave them the nuclear briefcase or whatever. That would be the wildest day in human history. It'd be a countdown on CNN. Does he? Doesn't he? You know? That'd be awesome. Especially if he did.
Here's a strange song, but it sounds like... I just got the Twin Peaks Blu-ray set a couple days ago in the mail. It looks amazing. I can't believe how clear it looks. I guess they just went back to the original film and the original prints and retransferred them. It looks like it. And then I had a song that I downloaded that sounds like it should be in Twin Peaks. So maybe I'll play that while you go take your bathroom break or whatever you wanted to do.
Sure, I'm going to refresh my drink.
Okay.
And refresh myself, too, with some underarm deodorant.
Wonderful. And you're the only person there, so you're offending yourself.
True. I'm just sitting here in my underwear. So when we come back, Ancient Aliens?
Yeah, sure.
Awesome.
Okay, we're on here with Paul Kimball on Radio Mysterioso on Kill Radio. That is not approved by the Lord. I kind of like that song. That's called Heart by a group of two girls from, I think, Minneapolis. I could be wrong, called Two of Clubs. Can you hear me there, Paul?
Oh, no, I can. That was a great song. That should, if I was to do a top 20 list of favorite songs Greg ever plays on Radio Mysterioso, that I think that is inched into my top 20 now.
Really?
Right up there you with really Space like Chipmunks and
Space Mice.
Space Mice, Space Mice, and Walter Brennan, and the Langley Schools Orchestra's version of Calling Intergalactic.
Calling Occupants of Interplanetary Craft.
Right.
Yeah.
Which maybe you can play that as your outro. I don't know. I love that. That is a wonderful song.
I think I have it on the iPod here, so yes, I can play it on the outro.
So we can dedicate it to Aaron Gullius.
Yeah. Here's on my iPod right now is Big Electric Cat by Adrian Belew, which is a great song.
On my iPod, I don't have an iPod, but on my computer, because I bought the album, is the new Morrissey album, which is World Peace is None of Your Business. I hardly recommend it. It hits his best work since Viva Hate. Now, moving on. Ancient Aliens. Oh, we're not going to talk about Ancient Aliens.
I don't know anything about it because I've only ever watched maybe one or two of the shows. And it's only because it's like, well, maybe I better watch it. And I looked at it, and I never watched an entire one of them. I'd see Dave Childress like, hey, it's Dave. And he'd be going, yeah, you know, the aliens, you know. We don't know about this. There's a South Sea Island with all these giant megalithic stones on it. And it's like, wow, that's Dave. I haven't seen Dave in a while. So, yeah, maybe I'd go out to Arizona there and visit Dave Childress in Sedona.
I've only ever met him once, that time we all went out to Death Valley, and you sound exactly like him there.
Very... You should. Walter and I, every once in a while when he's in the studio and when we're alone, we start dueling Dave Childresses, and we just start talking like Dave Childress for about 5 minutes at a time.
Speaking of Walter, you know what we should do? We should plug his movie. Well, first of all, he and Mike Williamson came up with the original story for the film that I eventually wrote the screenplay to, Cuckoo in the Clock, which is coming out in September. Yeah. So he gets a credit there. But did you watch? I'm sure you did, because your wife was listed as a producer, I think.
Yeah, because she gave him some seed money.
Okay, I have to talk to Sigrid about who she's giving seed money to.
It's not
hello,
gonna,
it's over here.
Yeah, let's see. Your film probably has like about 100 times the budget that Walter's does.
No. But did you see it? The name, for anyone who's wondering, it's called Sloppy Dead Second. So I assume you've seen it.
Yes, I did see it. It's hilarious.
It is, isn't it? It's really offensive, I'm sure, to some people. I was watching it, and I was laughing. And by the time we got to the end, it's only I think he still has it up online. I don't think he's taken it down yet.
Yeah.
So folks should go to I think it's on YouTube, right? Or Vimeo. Anyway,
it might be on Vimeo. Yeah, take one part
Vimeo.
Ed Wood.
That's
and one,
right.
Go ahead.
He didn't put it up on YouTube. It's on Vimeo. So yeah. Go to Vimeo and type in Sloppy Dead Seconds and maybe Walter Bosley and watch it because he's in it.
Yeah.
And it's for anyone who's ever listened to Walter on Radio Mysterioso or any other show, you know, or read his books. I mean, it's Ed Wood-esque funny.
Yeah, no, well, you take an equal part Ed Wood and John Waters and stir very well.
Yes.
And adding a little bit of Slasher.
And Frank Capra. There's little Frank Capra. It's a Wonderful Life, you know, kind of thing. Little Fritz Lang. But yeah, mostly Ed Wood and Lynch, yeah.
Yeah, and maybe some Lynch, too. Almost inadvertent, but yeah. Now, Ed Wood, John Waters, and a pinch of Lynch.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. So yeah, anyway, I quite enjoyed it. So that's our shout out to Walter Bosley tonight, because it's worth watching. I thought it was hilarious.
My community is getting so small. I just keep talking to the same people on my show because I enjoy it. And also because people say, why don't you have so-and-so on? Why don't you have so-and-so on? I say, because I'm not really interested to talk to that person. There are people I'm interested to talk to, but I'm very lazy about it. Unlike Binal, who just goes out and goes all out and finds all these interesting people.
Yeah, well, that's his gig, though. Like,
yeah.
It's not his only job, but it's what he does. He created the Binal of America Empire.
Yeah.
You and I are kind of like princes in the German Confederation. You know, we have like 400 square miles of land in the middle of Germany that nobody's ever heard of. Yay! But we entertain all the other royals. That's what we do. Or at least we only invite the ones we like or are interested in. So here's a question for you that doesn't involve ancient aliens. Because we don't want to... Well, it might. I don't know. It depends on what your answer is. So I had to answer the question about... Go Rightly sent in. You know, who would be on your Mount Rushmore of ridiculousness of modern ufology? Well, okay. Seems only fair that you would come up with a Mount Rushmore of ridiculousness, too. Who would be on your Mount Rushmore?
I guess the same people as you, except I would take off Bassett and put Sean Morton. And,
oh, okay.
And I would also take off one of the others. Who
Weber,
is he?
Weber, Bolton, Howe, and Schmidt.
Take off Schmidt and put on Michael Sala. And that's all. That's purely personal reasons, I think, because they both really pissed me off, and they Sala didn't piss me off. It's just that he's because of that one quote when I was arguing with him online or debating with him online, and he said people have problems with my methods because they don't rely on verifiable evidence.
Imagine that.
It's funny because he came right out and admitted it. It's like, no, I don't care if there's any evidence. I just go right with my gut, and I don't care if anybody has evidence to disprove anything I say. Okay, well then, I guess then that's... I don't know how you got a PhD in anything, but great.
I know lots of PhDs. It's not that hard, especially in the social sciences.
Maybe that's what it's in. I don't know.
So says the guy who doesn't have one. But although actually technically I do have a doctorate because I have a JD. And if you're in Europe, they do refer to lawyers as Dr. So-and-so. Not an American thing, but
really?
Your tradition is different. So
I remember when Randall got a degree, I think he got a doctorate in something online, and somebody called it a half-assed degree. And he said, I don't think it's half-assed. I think it might be three-quarters or maybe even fully-assed.
Oh, Kevin, there's so many things I could say. But
here's your siren coming. Is it coming? I think it's on another street. Oh, well. Oh, wait, it's coming closer. Here comes your siren. This is your siren.
Nice.
Wow. That's a loud one.
Wait, you're just playing that on the on your iPod, aren't you? There's no real
Did you hear how quickly it faded out? So, yeah.
Because he actually honked as if he knew he was on radio.
Yeah. And also that he knew he was coming to an extremely large, busy intersection here at Beverly and whatever the street is, Vermont.
Near the Jollibee.
Yes.
And the bullet hole in the front door.
There's no bullet hole in the front door.
There was a bullet hole last time.
No, it's not there now.
Okay. Those are the people on your Mount Rushmore of ridiculousness. So who's on your Mount Rushmore of not ridiculousness? I think it's safe to say ballet, yes?
Yeah, he's on there.
All right, so who are the other three?
Kiel.
Okay.
Are we talking about personal or, like, who I think should be as an example to everyone?
Oh, no, you're the sculptor. You can put whoever you want up there.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Valet, Kiel, probably Hynek. And I can't think of the last one.
Kimball. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. Oh, your brother Jim. Yes, he should be up there.
Yes, Jim Kimball is going to be the last one. So that's it. Valet, Kiel, Hynek, and Jim Kimball. Jim's going to go, huh, what?
Jim has just jumped over me and Stan Friedman at the family reunion. Anthropologists. Nice.
Yeah.
I'm sure that'll come as a shock to him.
I'm trying to think of another one. I know one. And you're not going to like this. Whitley Strieber.
Well, hold on now. You put Kiel in there, so we've already jumped the shark on not really being a big fan. Strieber.
No, I'm talking about ideas. I'm talking about ideas that affected me. Not that affected ufology, because they didn't affect a whole hell of a lot of people.
You'd be surprised. I actually like Strieber.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, as if you want to talk about something factual, it's really going on and he's reporting it as it is. And no, it has nothing to do with that. It has to do with what the perception is, what he thought was going on, different ways of looking at it, what he thought the symbology of it was, and what, how it was symbolic to him and maybe to the rest of the world. Whether it was happening to him as reported or not, I don't know. I probably don't care. What I care about is the thought behind, the thought process and the changing the mythology. And I'm not saying mythology meaning mythology, it's false and it's a myth. No, changing the narrative of the abduction thing in a way that really, if you paid attention to him, was really different from what everybody else was saying. I don't know if it's right or not. I have no idea. But it's interesting. Or was interesting. I don't know. I'm not talking about him now. I'm talking about when the communion books came out.
I agree. And I say I agree because I used to give Mac a fair bit of stick because he was a Strieber. I don't know if I'd say fan, but he certainly took him a lot more seriously than I did. And for me, it's not a question of taking him seriously. As a I've softened on Strieber. I view it as entertainment. I find him entertaining. Occasionally, I think he raises interesting ideas, even if I don't agree with them.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe he did have a genuine experience somewhere and he's trying to process it. And even if he didn't, even if he's doing it all just to make a buck, from a historical or sociological perspective, I find that interesting. So
yeah,
remember, we're talking about ufology, so our Mount Rushmores are not about necessarily serious researchers, but about people who interest us, right?
Yeah, interests us. And Gorightly made a very good point, and I totally forgot. I could knock either Keel or Strieber off there for Jim Moseley.
Well, okay, yeah. If you want to amount, yeah, you know what, Moseley would be, who am I for? I can't remember. If I was talking about serious researchers, right. If I was to put a Mount Rushmore of people who interest me in ufology, Moseley's definitely on it.
I like, you know what, and it's, if you want to be serious, strangely enough, who you mentioned earlier, Paul Hill.
Sure.
Just for that one book that was published after he died that he didn't even think was ever going to be published. I really enjoyed that book a lot.
It's a good book.
I should read it again.
On UFOs.
Yeah.
Which most people who looked into UFOs have probably never read and certainly don't own. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was the name of the book again?
You know what? It's over on another bookshelf because I do own it, but I'm going to have to look it up.
Well, I'm not at home, so it was...
I'm looking...
Unusual aerial objects.
Unconventional flying objects, a scientific analysis.
Yes.
Which you can actually buy on Amazon.
Yeah, I think it's still in print. Yeah, you know, I read it when it came out, what, like 15 years ago or something, and I was quite affected by it for a while. I still am, I think. And another person who I want to have on my show, I haven't yet, and as a theorist, Greg Little.
See, I'm not familiar with Greg Little, really.
His two big books about, they're kind of Fortean UFO books, People of the Web and, what was the other one? I can see the cover, but I can't remember the name of the book. But if you look up Gregory Little, and he's gone back and forth with me a little bit on Facebook, because apparently he used to be a pilot, so I've talked to him a little bit about that. People of the Web, that's it. People of the Web and the other one I just mentioned. God damn, I can't even think of the name of the first book. Anyway, it's Greg Little, and one of his books is People of the Web, and the other one is the one I can't recall right now. But basically what he did is, I think that probably Mac read his books too, because I saw a lot of that thinking in his books. He took a lot of that Keel theorizing and thought experiments, and based on the stuff that we see here, and based on what I've noticed, I think this is what might be going on, and added, I guess, Native American type spiritualism in it, other indigenous, you know, religions and ways of looking at things, Western science and what it had said about the phenomena, and mixed that all together into a kind of took Keel one or two or three steps further. And to me at the time, those books were very important, too.
My problem with Keel has never been what he said, because, again, we're not talking about agreeing or disagreeing. We're just talking about whether you find it interesting.
I think he took a lot of license, obviously, with the facts. But
yeah. That's not my problem either. My problem is I just never really found his writing style. And it's purely subjective. It didn't do it for me. Didn't. Resonate.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't care about he was an effective, to me, I thought he was an effective writer. He was effective at communicating his ideas to me at the time. He probably still is. And I'm glad I met him at least a couple of times. I feel horribly, incredibly lucky to have met him, been able to talk to him alone a couple of times for a couple of hours apiece.
So I'm going to read, and I'm going to read, I'm just going to make them up off the top of my head. Here's a list of people. Would you want to interview these people on Radio Mysterioso?
Oh, okay. You've been writing them down?
No, I'm just going to, some modern types. Richard Dolan. And the subject would be, because you might not want to talk to him about certain things, I don't know. How about Richard Dolan on Breakaway Civilization?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
I don't agree with him on a lot of things, but I think he comes by his opinions honestly, which is kind of, I think that's in short supply, but go ahead.
And the question here would not be whether you like the person personally or whether you think they're a liar or telling the truth or anything like that, but whether you just, your intellectual curiosity, you'd want to have a conversation with them on air in public.
Yeah.
So, okay, Dolan on at least Breakaway Civilization.
Yeah.
Nick Pope.
Sure, yeah.
Why
are you gonna come through and like slice? You gonna come through and slice this to ribbons in a minute, or
what? Me? No.
Yeah. I would talk to Nick Pope to find out how did he start. You know, how did everything start? How did his opinion change? And where is it now? And why is it at that point? Because he's not who he was 5 years ago, I don't think, or 10 years ago.
No.
And people change, and I want to find out what that change was, why it happened, and, you know, and how he's doing now. I guess he lives in Arizona. He got married to some American woman.
Yes. I think he has his green card now.
Yeah.
David Icke, or Ike, depending on how you pronounce it.
Not really.
Really? Well, he'd be on my list. I'd love to talk to him. He seems like a sit down and have a beer with him, but okay.
Sit down. Oh, you mean on the show or sit down and have a beer?
No, on the show, but I'd be
drinking.
On the
show, no. Sit down, have a beer, yes.
I'd be drinking at the time, because I think that's how I'd get through it. But
yeah,
I sort of view him as a Jonathan. I actually have a much better view of David Icke as a Swiftian satirist than I did.
Oh, really? Because that's how I kind of think of Bill Cooper.
Well, okay, wow. I just had a Don Ecker moment there where it's like, wow, if you'd said that in front of Don Ecker, he would have exploded. Bill Cooper.
I think Cooper knew he was screwing with people a lot of the time, and he did it for effect. I'm almost certain of that.
Oh, okay. In that case, I have no doubt about that. But the effect, yeah.
He believed some of it, but I think some of it he didn't. He just wanted to screw with people. He liked it.
Cooper's an interesting, fascinating character in the subcultural history of ufology. And he's much more interesting and fascinating now that he's dead, so that you can write about him and not have to worry about him letter bombing you or shooting you or something. So, you know, it's like, fine, all right. But yeah, Aaron has a chapter on Cooper and the Chaos Conundrum available at redstarfilmtv.com out of Red Star Books.
Yeah.
And his own sort of feelings about Cooper. And it's, you know, it's interesting. Aaron had this book to write about ufology, or in part about ufology, and the key character he really chose to hone in on was Bill Cooper. It wasn't Stan Friedman or, you know, Kevin Randall or David Jacobs or any of those guys. It was,
well, those
Bill
people are
Cooper.
Boring compared to Cooper.
Well, that's the interesting thing. The impact that Cooper had on the ideas that were formulated in the 1980s about ufology, UFOs, the conspiracy, the cover up, all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, he had as much of an impact, and maybe more, as it bled through into all these other people than Stan Friedman or Kevin Randall. Because the ideas he had really informed the countercultural conspiracy thing that took root in the 80s.
Oh, he was the countercultural conspiracy thing for a while. I mean, that it was him.
Yeah,
and then everything kind of went through him and around him.
Nobody today wants to admit that. Now, I certainly understand why.
Yeah.
But there was a, and look, you can go down a long list. We've gotten off the subject of who you'd interview, but you know, like,
we can come back to it.
John Lear is another guy, not nearly as potentially violent as William Cooper,
yeah.
But Lear had a huge impact on creating
yes.
that. So
yeah.
There's all of these people who have been written out of the whitewashed UFO culture story because they want to talk about the serious people, or what they consider to be the serious people. The ones, the talking heads on TV now and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But there was that Wild West period in the 80s.
Yeah.
And Aaron talks about it a lot in his book. Lear, Cooper, the Val Valerian kind of guys, all these guys with the crazy ideas. And a lot of that craziness kind of wandered off and never came back.
Yeah.
But some of it stuck and went mainstream within, you know, mainstream ufology. Some of it even went mainstream through by way of the X-Files and television shows.
Yeah, and Independence Day and all that stuff.
Yeah, I would argue that those guys had more of an impact on the broader culture than any single UFO researcher in the 1980s.
I would have no problem agreeing with you on that.
All right, we can go home now.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. All right, we're done, folks. 10 minutes early.
All right. Well, I don't know who else I'd want to talk to. Do you have any other names?
Let's see. Who? I got to find somebody I think you... Okay, well, here. Stan Friedman.
Sure, I'd talk to Stan.
Okay. I thought that might trip you up a bit.
Like I said, you know what? Mostly because I kind of know what kind of person he is, and I would give him a little bit of shit, but not a lot, and let him go.
Sure, because he's a nice guy.
Yeah, I mean, when I published an interview with Richard Boylan, people wrote in and talked to me found me at conferences or whatever and said, God, you were hard on him. And I said, well, he was being rude. He is being rude and arrogant with me. So, of course, my questions got nastier. If you're going to be rude and arrogant with me, yeah, I'll come back at you. But if you're just going to go off, go ahead and go off. That's fine.
Still
not,
thinking. I'm
not that
to
Stan
think of
would go off. I mean, he goes off in his own way, which is, you know, his shtick. But
what about the guy from Ancient Aliens, the big hair?
Sukalos?
That guy.
Sukalicious?
I can't pronounce his name. I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe.
So, see, folks, when Greg says there's really only three or four people he wants to talk to, there's actually an awful lot of people he would probably talk to if he had, like, a good producer.
Yes, yeah, because I'm my producer, and most of the time my producer is off at another job.
Yes. True enough. Michael Sala. Would you talk to Michael Sala?
No.
Okay. Now we've established Stephen Greer.
Nope.
Would you want to have Stephen Greer on your show?
Nope.
Okay. We've established the threshold. Exopolitics. Bassett.
Nope.
Just for the entertainment value? No.
Nope. Okay.
Yeah, you're too nice. A show with
no,
you
and it's
Bassett.
Not nice. I don't learn shit from these people.
No, I'm just saying from an entertainment point of view, Bassett's known to explode if somebody like David Biedney pushes his buttons or I push his buttons. But you're not a button pusher. You're a nice guy. So it would
I think I am. One, I'm nice. And two, I think I'm averse to any kind of conflict for the conflict's sake. If somebody's dicking with me, yeah, I'll fight you. If somebody's attacking me, yes, I'm going to defend myself, but I'm not going to go after somebody. I don't feel like doing it. It accomplishes nothing to me. You know what it is? It makes, if I was going to do that, it would just make me, it would be, that is an ego thing. I am a smart person, and I've brought this dumb person to your attention and conquered them. I don't care about that.
You're wise in the ways of the Force, young Jedi.
I guess. If I'm going to have somebody on, I'm going to either have fun or learn something, or preferably both.
All right, so here's one for you. Now you and I have mastered time travel. So we've created a working time machine.
Okay, see ya.
Well, how was it? Because, folks, Greg just left, and for him it was 8 months. But for you and I,
I got a headache. I flashed on that Napoleon Dynamite thing where they turn on the machine. And it's, turn it off! Turn it off!
Oh, I thought you said you had just flashed back to Napoleon.
No, Napoleon Dynamite, when they order the time machine off the internet, and it basically just shocks you.
A movie I've never seen, but people tell me I should.
Oh, you'd like it, Paul. And if you didn't, I'd wonder about you more than I normally do.
Yeah. If you could travel throughout time, what one person from who's dead now, so no longer living, in ufology... would you want to interview that you never did? So Mosley doesn't count because you did interview, right? So somebody
Gray Barker.
Who's dead.
Number one, Gray Barker.
Okay. Good choice.
Yeah. Who else? Woody Derenberger, strangely enough.
All right, you're going to have to explain that one not only to me, but I suspect the vast majority of the listening audience.
Woody Derenberger was the contactee dude that came out in the wake of the Mothman stuff. He said that he traveled to the planet Lanulos, or at least met people from there. He lived in West Virginia, and him, I think his wife supported his claims for a while.
Oh, okay.
And he, oh, and he was, his contact from Llanulos was the famous Indrid Cold.
Ooh, not a name that you're supposed to say, isn't that? Isn't
yeah.
that the thing?
You're not supposed to say that? Well, too late now.
I don't know. It's a long story. All right. Okay. Anybody else? Adamski? Would you want to talk to Adamski?
Yeah, I think I'd want to talk to Adamski and George Hunt Williamson and, you know, all the normal contactees. Hynek, obviously.
Kehoe?
We're talking about benefit of hindsight, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, not like if we were back then, because back
exactly.
then, yeah, certainly. Now, maybe.
Because we have the time machine, so we know who they were, and there's only so much energy in the time machine. We can only use it like 4 times.
Oh, okay.
So who are the 4 you wanted? There you go. So
oh, that's,
Keo's
that's a good
out.
Question. Yeah. So, yeah, Barker, Woody Derenberger, Hynek, and Leonard Stringfield.
Yeah, okay.
Because his stuff, his, like, you know, his crash saucer stuff fascinated the hell out of me when it was, I saw the last one. And then I went back and saw a few bits and pieces of the older ones. What were they called? There were updates or something like that. But his last one had, they're just full of great stories. Don't know if they're true or not, but there are all these stories that trickle into him about, you know, my dad was in the military and he saw this. And, you know, everybody would come to him with these stories. But, yeah, I'd like to talk to him. Gorightly says, Gray Barker did more to influence the early days of ufology than anyone else, period.
I'm not sure I'd say anyone else, but I'd put him in the top 5, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, I would too. So anyway, I mean,
it's
yeah.
It's hard to pick one, but yeah, he'd definitely be there. Kehoe would definitely be there.
Yeah.
He created he's the great-grandfather of exopolitics.
Yeah,
he created
exactly.
conspiracy culture.
Yeah.
There's a few other. Adamski, obviously.
Yeah.
I'd
like to talk to.
I would want to talk to Silas Newton.
Really?
Yeah. Not that I think the Aztec thing was real in any way.
No,
shape,
no,
or form,
I know what you mean.
But he's such a character.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk to Jabauer because he seems like he was the sort of not terribly
stooge.
Bright, so stooge. Although those guys can be interesting too.
Yes.
And I'm Frank Scully, yeah, maybe. But
maybe.
Silas Newton is just this fascinating guy, this oil swindler. He had a very interesting life story
yes.
above and beyond the UFO thing.
Mm-hmm.
He'd be a cool cat to talk to. I'd keep my hand on my wallet throughout the entire interview. But and I certainly wouldn't let him anywhere near the time machine. But yeah, I'd like to talk to him. He'd be interesting, I think.
Yeah. Let's just say, you know, have
Gray Barker. Yeah, I'd like to talk to Gray Barker. He'd be on my list if I had 4.
Yeah, well, I missed Gray Barker by like a month, so I could have talked to him, but I didn't.
Hynek, yeah, he'd be probably on my list too. He'd be an interesting guy. Because you could, if nothing else, you could talk to Hynek about Blue Book until you ran out of breath. You could just ask him question after question after question about even just the people and then the Condon report. Or you could just spend an hour talking to him about swamp gas. That entire thing.
I don't think you'd want to talk about it.
He'd be an interesting cat.
How,
you know who else I'd like to talk to? Because he'd be interesting too. Edward Condon.
Yeah,
I'd like
can see
talk
that.
To Edward Condon. Not just about UFOs, but about UFOs. But Condon had an interesting career too. So there's
and he was all into the contactee movement. He went to some of the Giant Rock conferences.
That's right. Speaking of contactees, Wilbert Smith. The Canadian contactee
yes.
who
yeah.
wrote famous memo or infamous memo. I'd like to talk to him. It's funny, the people that we're picking, you know. I'd like to talk to Phil Klass. He was certainly alive. I could have, because he didn't pass away until I was well into this UFO thing.
Yeah.
But I never sought him out. I never corresponded with him at all.
I'd have him on my show if he was alive.
So would I.
Yeah.
So Klass, definitely. And we were both lucky in the sense that we got to know and chat many times with Jim Moseley. So,
yeah.
So to the generation coming after us who would say, I'd want to talk to Jim Moseley, I'd say, well, just listen to Greg's show.
Yeah. He was on, I think I've got 2 shows with him posted. And I think that's all I had. I mean, I talked to him quite a bit. I mean, he would call me on the phone late at night sometimes, and we'd talk for, you know, an hour or two. But I didn't record any of those.
All right. I guess we're almost out of time, and we haven't even talked about Ancient Aliens yet. Wow.
We can. There is no show after me. I will stay a little bit, since we didn't get started till what, like 10, 15, quarter after, maybe?
Woohoo! Bonus time!
Yeah, free baseball.
Yeah, that's right. We're into extra innings, folks. Tampa Bay Rays game.
Yeah, I saw there's a Dodger 12-inning game last night that I went to. That was fun because they won.
Here's a World Series prediction for you. Dodgers and Oakland A's.
You think so?
I think there's a pretty good chance.
There's a good chance. It's either Dodgers, A's, Dodgers. That's going to make everybody mad. It'll be like a freeway series. Dodgers, A's, or Dodgers, Angels.
Dodgers, Giants. Or, sorry, not Dodgers, Giants. A's, Giants would be another freeway series that would...
What, it's a repeat of the earthquake one from 10 years ago, whatever it was?
Dodgers, Angels. Wow. Okay, that would be interesting.
Yeah, I'm going to go to the Dodgers-Angels game on Tuesday with my flying instructor, my airplane flying instructor. He's an Angels fan.
So who would you say are the most, because this Go Rightly point, Gray Barker. So who do you think, if you had to pick four or five people who have shaped the course of ufology as a subculture, the memes, everything, throughout all of history,
yeah.
who do you think, Barker obviously I gather would be one.
Yeah.
And I would agree with that. So who do you think some of the other people would be? For good or ill. These can be like wing nuts who terrible people, or they can be really serious people like Hynek or
Yeah, Barker would be one. Two would be Strieber.
Yes, I wouldn't disagree.
Yeah. Three.
Adamski?
Ray Palmer? Huh?
Ray Palmer?
Yeah. That's very astute. Yes, most definitely. Ray Palmer hiring Kenneth Arnold to write stories for him. Yes, mm-hmm. and subsequent things, you know, like publishing the Shaver stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's three.
Okay.
And I guess because he was the public face of what people thought was serious, is Hynek again.
Yes, sure,
anybody who's introduced to the UFO things, who's the scientist that's doing this, especially after Blue Book, obviously, would be Hynek.
Yeah, especially because of Blue Book, but also because he founded QFOS, the Center for UFO Studies,
yes.
Which is a moribund, I don't even know if they're still around, but for many years was one of the two or three, and certainly the most respected, again, it's a low bar to clear, folks, but they were the most respected amongst all the UFO groups. Like MUFON and APRO and that sort of stuff. So
yeah, I'm sorry I wouldn't put Coral and Jim Lorenzen on there. I don't know why. Very very strong candidates, but
I was just their names literally just went through my head as you were just before you said that. Oh, before I go, we'll end on my run of synchronicity that I've had this past week, but not yet because you'll appreciate it.
Okay.
Because you were there when I had my last one, which made it into my book.
Yeah, I thought you were going nuts, but you probably thought so too.
Well, yeah, going.
I thought you were going obviously nuts instead of quietly nuts.
I'm not just going. I have a house in Nutsville. I was just building a new wing.
Yeah.
putting a pool in the back, my nutty pool.
Nut-shaped nut pool.
What about valet? Look, this conversation has come full circle. Do you think he's had in the culture at large... Not within his select, whether you call it cult or fans or whatever, but has he had the kind of influence that somebody like Gray Barker has had?
Nope. I do not think so.
But he was the basis of a character in Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Yeah, but that's only people anybody knows of him for. That's the only thing they know about him, really. Yeah. If they know anything about him in ufology, it's like, oh yeah, that dude. That and inside ufology, you know, or whatever you want to call it, huge influence amongst a certain crowd. Outside, almost none.
What about Keel?
Because you can't soundbite him.
Well, you can. It just won't sound very good.
Yeah, I know.
Have a French accent.
Keel slightly more because of the film and that people know what the. I mean, a random person in an urban area will know what the Mothman is because of Keel.
It was a really bad film with Richard Gere.
Yes. I never thought it was very good.
What about Uncle Stan Friedman?
Yeah, that's another one. I mean, if people of a public face, so many people saw Stan in the 60s and 70s doing the college lecture circuit after he stole it from Mosley. Or so claimed Mosley.
Greer? Trying to find somebody in the modern era who's not over 60 years old. Because everybody we've just listed is either dead, dying, or close to dying. So, yeah. Is there anybody in the last 15 years that you think has shaped ufology and made an impact on the broader culture? Maybe Bassett.
And maybe Rich Dolan, maybe.
I don't know about Dolan because I think his books are overrated.
You think they're overrated. I'm just talking about bleeding into the larger culture and having people aware of it.
Well, that's what I mean. I'm not talking in a critical assessment of his books, which are a totally different thing. I just don't think to me, he'd be like Valet or somebody. He's very popular within the subculture, but I don't think he's bled out into the mainstream culture.
Yeah, you could be right. Yeah, I think I might agree with that.
But Bassett has. Whatever else you want to say about Bassett, the X conferences got some notice and the citizens hearing. I mean, you know, again.
Yeah, that citizens hearing thing. Yeah, you're right. Because I had people at work going, did you hear about that? And I was like,
Yeah. I had friends who would approach me and say, hey, what's this? You know, are you going or whatever? No, I'm not going. These people are, you know, no, I'm not. But yeah, so the whole exopolitics thing, somebody has to be, I think that has, whether they call it that or not, it has sort of had a presence, at least in the mainstream culture.
Yeah.
And somebody should get credit for that. It's not going to be Weber or Sala because nobody knows who they are.
Yeah.
So you're down to Greer and Bassett, really.
Yeah. Greer within, Bassett more without. Outside of the,
So in a weird sense, for all the grief I give him about being a lousy political activist, which he is, at least he's gotten some attention, more so than probably anybody in the last 15 or 20 years, I think. I just can't think of anybody else.
I think what he thinks is doing is exceedingly important, and he's one of the few people that, I mean, more important than it, he thinks it has more impact than it does. And I think it has almost zero impact on the larger culture. But the amount that it does, people actually know his name. So I guess you're right. Maybe he's partially right about saying this is important stuff because a few people know who he is.
I agree. It's had a much lower impact than, say, Stan Friedman's college lectures or Gray Barker, any of those figures from the Halcyon days.
The second Roswell book, because the first one basically just set the stage for the second one the Smith and Randall one that most people base their ideas about it on.
Yeah. What does ufology, UFO, all that stuff, what is needed, because it's really off pretty much everyone's radar now, what is needed to return it to its high watermark of the 1980s, or even say the 1960s.
Something that the phenomenon does has to happen, or somebody that's really good at doing publicity that has a really good message. And after saying that, I hope that doesn't happen. I hope it dies. And it becomes an underground thing that only a few people are interested in so that it can flower into something else. Otherwise, it's going to be stuck in this ego thing, and it's going to be stuck in this, you know, we got to prove this or that. I want to write something about this, and I think I will. I've been thinking about this for a while. Just like, take it underground, don't have any more organizations, and basically kill it. I think I would like to see it killed in the present form, whatever was left of it. And somebody, you know, and a new group of people or a group of people that are looking at it differently. And I've been saying this on Facebook a little bit. No preconceptions, if that's even possible. And for God's sake, don't lust after any result. Do not make your mind up what you're looking for in the first place. It's going to be really hard to do that because you've got such an imprint of what it's supposed to be. So, and I don't know what will happen if that could happen. I don't think it will happen. That's my hope. That's my suggestion. Does it make sense?
It does. From your point of view, I was referring more to, and I don't disagree with you, but I was referring more to how would you get it back to where you don't want it to get back to where it was in the 80s, which, you know,
I don't want it to get it back to where it was anywhere.
Right. Exactly. I'm thinking, how would you, if you wanted to re-energize people's interest in UFOs, how would you go? What do you need? Or how would you go about doing it? because it's not like we don't have television shows.
Yeah.
We had UFO Hunters, we had Ancient Aliens, so in a sense, it's actually kind of popular. It's just nobody takes it seriously. Because everybody, I think, pretty much thinks that knows Ancient Aliens is what it is. It's just,
you know what you'd have to do? Get somebody that everybody respects as sort of a scientist to really go whole hog with it.
Okay.
Like, you know, if Neil Tyson suddenly said, I'm going to do a show about UFOs, that would have a huge impact. He won't, because he thinks it's a bunch of bullshit, I'm pretty sure.
Right.
But I think people like spokespeople. People like, you know, or an actor or something like that. A really, like, big one. To really go whole hog on it and, you know, it's, and do it in a way that, you know, not as a reality show. Not as, let's go investigate UFOs. But more like a, kind of like a fun historical. Are you trying to pull this idea from me so you can do it? I think you should. Somebody should.
I have a different way of it totally differently. So,
How would you do it? It's probably a lot better than what I'm thinking. What would you do?
Not necessarily. It comes back to Bill Moore. What I believe he did. I would. I'm with him. I'd fake something. I would fake.
I don't think he faked anything.
Personally, I have the talent or the connections to fake some pretty good video, but video isn't going to cut it anymore.
Oh no! No!
Because everybody can fake video. So weirdly enough, we're in such a technologically advanced world where everybody can put a YouTube video up that looks perhaps passably good.
Yeah.
That I think you would have to go old school, and you would have to fake, we come back to MJ-12, documents. And you'd have to do a better job than they did at MJ-12. I would tie it in, the UFO thing, I wouldn't even necessarily have aliens, although I'd hint at it, but I would tie it in to the and I think Dolan's onto something here. I would tie it into the national security state. I would play on people's fears, and hopefully one of two things would happen. I would do it from a point of view of trying to make money, and hey, this is good for business. But if you wanted the truth, in quotation marks, whatever that is, and you believe that the truth was a government conspiracy, then I would play on people's fears. I would put it out there, and I would try and shake something else loose, if you actually believe there's something to shake loose. And I think that is what might re-energize it and catch people's attention, because I think in the world we live in now, the conspiracy thing has gone, it's been lost. UFOs need to reclaim it and need to, and it's what Dolan's on, has been this trying to link UFOs and the national security state together.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's been very successful in the broader culture, which is to say, I don't think he's been successful at all. But I think somebody else could be. And I think they would have to be a little more clever than Dolan and a little more nuanced. Because he comes on too hardcore with the alien thing. I think you have to seed that in. So that's how I would do it. And if you see something like that come out within the next 6 months, folks, yeah, that was probably me. Especially if somebody's making money off it.
It might be, but you know, it would last for 6 months and then it would be subsumed into something else or it would disappear.
Maybe.
Because and we're thinking about this, and like, who's going to re-energize? It's like, I don't think things have staying power anymore because of the nature of media and the internet and the way people's attention can be swayed very quickly. Things don't have a shelf like they used to. They don't have legs. You know, I guess Ancient Aliens notwithstanding, what are they in, like, their fifth season or something?
No idea.
Yeah,
no.
I don't know what it is, but I, you know, for something to do that, like, you know, something to have the staying power of something like The Simpsons or any TV show that goes on a long, long time, it has to. I don't know what it has to be. I guess it has to continually evolve in a way that people think is a natural and interesting and, you know, natural extension of the last thing that it was. And I don't know what that is with the UFOs.
I suppose it's kind of a silly question, isn't it? Because it's not going to happen.
No, it's not going to happen. Like, what I think is going to happen is it's something exceedingly stupid is going to take its place and capture everybody's attention and all the UFO groups and all that. Something horribly stupid and that takes us way off the track. I'm hoping that won't happen. I hope it just kind of dies from lack of interest.
Well, that would be Ancient Aliens. So, although it hasn't died from lack of interest. But I guess the real problem is, at least in the 80s, they were basing it off of Roswell. And while Roswell was 40 years old, the actual pulling the story out and all these finding witnesses and everything, that was relatively, oh my God, sorry, I just saw something that I shouldn't have seen. That was relatively,
I'm not going to ask.
That sounded wrong. It sounded like I'm looking at kiddie porn or something. I just saw something I shouldn't have seen.
Yeah. Did you just flash on a picture or something, or did your pants fall off? What the hell?
No, I don't have any pants on.
Oh, okay.
It was,
well then stop looking down.
It was a Facebook note that came in.
Oh, okay.
There's nothing new, right? So James Fox is making this film. And as you know, I don't think much of James Fox at all.
But I know.
He's got this new film, and I think Tracy Torme is involved somehow.
Yeah.
About the Blue Book Files, 701 or whatever it is, the unsolved Blue
Book
Files.
Yeah. That's funny, because the original Frank Strange's film, Phenomena 7.7, actually was based on that, the 7.7% unknown from Blue Book, I think.
There you go. The problem is, that's a documentary about something that's 40 years old.
Yeah.
More. It's actually closer to 40 or 50 years old. So they were wrapping Blue Book up when I was born, and I know how old I am. So, yeah. So there's nothing. The real problem, ladies and gentlemen, is there's nothing new. There's no new big cases. There's no new important witnesses. There's nothing new. There's no young people, not in UFO research or whatever you want to call it, subculture, but coming forward with real stories. It's as if Carl Flock used to say this. He actually believed aliens did come here, took a look around, and left in the late 60s.
I thought that it was always a convenient thing for him to say, because it allowed him to discount everything that came after what he thought was the cutoff date.
True, but not Roswell, which he actually had to go out and work to discount.
Yes.
But he did think the Hill case was real, for instance. And when you look at what Carl said, I challenge folks to find a case since 1990 that resonates in any way, shape, or form the way, for whatever reason, that Roswell did, or the Hill case did, or some of those earlier cases.
Yeah.
Because I can't think
Lonnie
of
Lonnie Zamora.
The two closest I can think of, absolutely, were the O'Hare, the Chicago O'Hare case, which just kind of eventually disappeared.
And Stephenville, I guess.
And Stephenville, which again, and maybe Phoenix Lights, because that happened.
Maybe, yeah, that too.
Fine. So those are the three. None of those three really, I don't think anybody takes terribly seriously outside ufology. And it certainly hasn't created this wave of movies and films outside of ufology.
No.
So it's just not there. That you don't have anything to work with unless you tap into the conspiracy thing. And even that has moved on since 9/11 to conspiracies that actually are real and might have something, you know, could have an impact on our lives. So I don't know. I think you're probably going to get your wish. Because I think it's dying, and it's like the parrot in the Monty Python skit. It's pretty much pining for the fjords of Norway.
Yes, this UFO parrot has passed on.
It is deceased.
Yes, it has ceased to be.
It has ceased to exist.
It's gone and joined the bleeding choir invisible.
But if there is something else out there that's interacting with us, and let's end on a positive note. Because people might
have
too curmudgeous.
I have little doubt about that, and I've always said that.
What?
I've had little doubt about that, and I've always said that.
Well,
a consciousness that is not us that interacts with us occasionally.
People will hate us if we're curmudgeons. We have to leave them with something positive. So here's what
I'm not
say.
A curmudgeon. I want everything to die so it can be reborn. That's not curmudgeonly at all.
Well, okay, fine. Then I'm going to go with that, but I won't say quite like that. Maybe. Again, this is all presupposing that we have some control. Let's assume that there is something out there, first of all.
Yeah.
Then it presupposes that we have something, some sort of control over it in the sense that we can manage it, box it, and present it. And maybe what's happening is it presented itself to us in one way. It was finished with that, maybe around the time Carl Flock was talking about.
Yeah.
And it'll come back in a different form. And it will be in a different form that will be wholly unrecognizable from anything to do with the UFO thing and space aliens.
Right, yeah. That's something that Nick and I and a few people, and probably with you, talked about on this show. If anything's going to change, it might come from whatever is causing the phenomenon itself.
Yeah, could be.
It changes.
So that's positive. So my synchronicity.
Yes.
I can't tell you all of it because a lot of it's personal and or business related, weirdly enough. But it started I was, you might have seen on Facebook, I was posting pictures of these superhero figures I bought.
Yes.
So the first one I post, I was out of town, and I came back last weekend. Alzheimer's, I'm getting old. And I went to the local store, and I bought, of all the figures, like they got Superman, Batman, Hawkman, everything. Who did I buy? I bought an Aquaman figure. Nobody buys Aquaman. Nobody, even superhero fans don't buy
Seaman.
Yeah. But I bought Seaman. See, now that sounds terrible. That's because I said Seaman. So I bring him home and I take him out of his little package because I'm not some nerdy geek who keeps him in his package so I can make $1 million in 50 years. I want to put him out on the mantle where he's standing.
Yes.
So I buy Aquaman and my roommate slash cohabitor slash former fiance, whatever, best friend, Linda says, "Oh my God, you bought another superhero." I went, "Yes, I'm going to be buying a lot because I got paid lately. So I'm, you know, pick up a few new ones." She's, "Yeah, who is that?" I went, "It's Aquaman." And she went, "Aquaman?
Who?
Nobody buys Aquaman." Aquaman's the lamest of all. She went, "Oh, he talks to fishes." And then she wandered off. So I had all I PVR'd these television shows, one of which that I watch regularly is Last Week with John Oliver, which I love. It's sort of, he's much better than even Colbert or Stewart, in my opinion. It's a great show. So that's the first thing I watch. I go in, I turn on the TV and the PVR. Boom, I'm watching John Oliver.
You just like him because he has a British accent.
That too. And halfway through, what does he do? He makes fun of guys who buy Aquaman figures. And just 2 hours before, I had bought an Aquaman figure and been made fun of. And he literally says, "You know what, guys?" He picks on their girlfriends or wives or whatever. And he says, "The women are never going to find Aquaman sexy," whatever is exactly. "Brother, you speaketh the truth. Let me tell you, you bring Aquaman home. Not cool."
Yeah,
Superman.
You're not
maybe.
Getting laid
so,
tonight.
And I thought, well, that's so. I wander into Linda. I said, "Linda, you know the blah blah." And she goes, "That's coincidental. Yeah, that's a little weird. That's a little synchronous." I thought.
Fine. Or precognitive on your part, but go ahead.
But then it keeps coming. So every day for the past week, I've had something, and they keep like they did in Los Angeles 3 years ago now. They're getting weirder and weirder every day. So I'm trying to figure out, is something getting weirder and weirder with me? Am I just getting, you know, delving deep into it? Or as you would say, is it always there? And now that I've had my interest peaked, I've turned my attention to it again for a brief period of time. So I'm noticing it.
Hey, that's not always it. But I think you have an effect on possibly what you run into. And there's maybe a little precognitive thing going on in there. And I think there's a lot of factors that go into a knot of synchronicities like that.
Now, if I had bought an elongated man action figure and Oliver had made fun of elongated man, I would join Greer's cult or whatever. But because elongated man's even more pathetic than Aquaman.
I didn't even know there was such a superhero.
Ralph Dibny. He was not a founding member of the Justice League of America, but he was later a member of the Justice League of America, and he could stretch. He was like Mr. Fantastic. That was his shtick. And he was the stretching detective. His nose would twitch. Any time that he smelled a mystery or scented a mystery, his little nose would twitch because he was plastic. Elongated man. Yeah.
That was his actual name. It wasn't like Rubber Man or anything.
Nope. Well, they had Plastic Man, who was Eel O'Brien, and Elongated Man was kind of a less impressive Plastic Man.
I did not know the depths of your nerdiness, Paul. I don't know any of this stuff.
Did you know that one of my favorite characters, who I almost bought the other day, the Atom, who is one of the Silver Age superheroes for DC Comics, his name, the character, the guy who is the Atom, is Ray Palmer. And they named him Ray Palmer because of Ray Palmer. That's where they get it from, because he was a science fiction
movie. Yeah, he's a Fantastic Stories guy.
Yeah, so there, you know, even then, when we talk about influential figures in the sort of broader culture, I they didn't name Superman Ray Palmer, but when they rebooted the DC universe in the 60s and recreated all these heroes, including the Atom, who had been a guy named Al Pratt in the 30s and 40s and 50s, they named him Ray Palmer. Yeah. I mean, that's you're kind of bleeding, even with a minor superhero, you're bleeding into the larger culture if you've had that effect. I mean, nobody's going to name a new superhero Stephen Greer. Although you never know. Maybe.
Some people already have, I think.
Yeah.
That's so what we should have, like Stephen Greer superhero figurine.
Yeah, he's a superhero called Money Man. Yeah, as in I take it.
Yes.
He's in a league of money with Sean David Morton.
Ego Man.
Ego, well, yeah, I know he's got a pretty good ego. Although I've told this story before, when I interviewed him in 2001 and we had put green up behind him because it was the only color we had left. We'd used all the other ones, blue, red, whatever. And his assistant came in and said, oh, no, you can't do that. It makes Dr. Greer look crazy. It's the Martian green color. And I totally understood where he was coming for. I hadn't even thought of it.
Yeah.
And I went, oh, okay, we'll change the color. Greer wanders in. I said, look, Dr. Greer, we're really sorry. We'll change. Take us about 5 minutes to mix some colors. We'll get some sort of orange or something. He said, no, don't worry about it. And I always thought, you know what, for all my criticisms of Dr. Greer over the years, I had that one moment where I said, oh, well, he's perfectly reasonable, and he was very good about it. He was, you know, perfectly gentle. He said, oh, don't worry about it. Sometimes my aides get a little too officious, and I went, yeah, tell me about it. I still have bruises on my arms. but yeah, no, he was very good about that one thing, at least. So there you go.
Oh, okay. I guess he can. He was reasonable occasionally 12 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess we're done. Are we? Are we done?
Yeah. Done. Yeah. Now we're 25 minutes after the hour. So now we've been recording for 2 hours and 18 minutes because I turned this on a little early just in case, because I like banter and weird stuff before the show, which I always include, as you know.
We didn't have any banter.
No, we didn't, but it was the technical difficulties area. I turned on, it's like, I wonder if my phone will work with this instead of the computer, which is what I usually use the Skype on. It's like, oh, good, I have Skype on the phone. I'll just do it that way. I don't have the computer here today. All I have is my little tiny phone with Skype running on it.
Think about that, the technology. So what are you going to play me out to? Normally I'd say Gringo Like Me, but...
You said Langley School's music project?
Well, right, yeah. This has been totally a UFO episode.
Yeah, it turned into a UFO episode. You're right. Let me see if I have it on here. I should, because this is the iPod with everything I've ever had, I think, on it, or pretty close.
Otherwise, I would request the Mellotones and the Flying Saucer gospel song I love.
Oh, yeah, Flying Saucers.
Yeah. Well, the Space Mice are always good, too.
Yeah, Space Mice is good. Wait a second. Who is that? Oh, Langley Schools. Langley School's music project. Let's see what they have. Calling Occupants of Interplanetary Craft. Yes, I have it.
There you go. It's old school contactee stuff.
Yes. It's actually the meditation that Albert K. Bender. That was Albert K. Bender's meditation to recite silently to yourself on World Contact Day that he instructed everybody who was a member of the International Flying Saucers Bureau to do sometime in the late 50s, I believe. I can't remember the year. But from that, Klaatu, the rock band of the 70s, put together a song called Calling Occupants of Interplanetary Craft, and then a bunch of people covered it. Most notably, first was the Carpenters. So,
by the way, George Van Tassel, I'd love to go back and interview him.
Yes, I think I mentioned him.
Maybe you did. Yeah.
I said Van Tassel and George Hunt Williamson, all the Georges.
All the Georges. And the interesting thing about this particular song for you and I, because we're huge Beatle fans and we're always yabbering on about the Beatles and singing the Beatles and blah, yeah, is when Klaatu came out, a lot of people actually thought it was the Beatles operating under a pseudonym.
I didn't know that. I remember it now when you mentioned it. Yeah, I have heard that. Yes.
So there's a slight Beatles connection that ties it into you and I.
Okay.
Sort of. Yeah.
So I'll have to unplug the phone and plug it into the... That was good and loud. Somebody's got something they're trying to compensate for, possibly, with this loud car.
I thought you just had Dean Ambrose walk into your studio, and only WWE fans are going to get that reference. So.
Okay, he must have had some sort of a problem.
That one's for Benal and Aaron Gullius.
Oh, okay.
No, his entrance music starts with a car engine revving.
Oh, okay. Well, we've been talking with Paul Kimball, whose musings you can see at othersideoftruth.com. And where else?
No, not othersideoftruth.com. There is no such site.
Sorry.
My website is BeyondersTV, right? Yeah. Let me double check.
I'm sorry,
that.
Blogspot. It was the Other Side of Truth is a blog. Sorry.
Oh, this is terrible. I'm unlike Stan. I can't remember my own website. Oh, just go to stantonfriedman.com.
Okay.
No, BeyondersTV, BeyondersTV.com.
Okay.
That's my personal website, and there's stuff there.
And just go to Stan's site instead.
Yeah, just go to stantonfriedman.com. Exactly.
All right, Paul. I think we must talk offline here sometime soon.
Yes, let's do.
Okay, Paul, thanks so much.
Coolio, thanks, Greg. A pleasure as always. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Yeah, and pleasure to talk to you and talk to you soon. And here's Langley School's music project. Thanks, Paul. There it is.
In your mind.
Thanks for listening.